5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the March 12th Historic Preservation Board meeting of the City of Miami Beach. I have a few sequencing things to remind us of how we keep our meetings orderly and hopefully on time. And so each item today, and we fortunately have a short agenda, but each item will be presented and introduced by the staff. And the staff will describe their recommendations, and after which we'll have board questions for the staff. And after the board questions of the staff are finished, we will have an applicant make a presentation within a limited time, and then the board will have questions for the applicant. And usually, the applicant will take all the questions together, and then we'll sit down. And then there we'll have board disclosures, and we'll open the public hearing and have the staff call in the public first in person and then on Zoom. And we try to have public comments, not repeat each public comment, but to the best that we can. And there's an optional applicant rebuttal to the public comment, after which there's board member comment, and we try to go in order one by one, so every person is heard with the ending with the chair. And we may then decide to have a straw poll and have amendments to a motion. If we have a motion and a second and board discussion, we may amend the motion and then ultimately have a roll call vote. So that's all I've got. So, Debbie, do you want to start
sure,
us off?
Sure, I'll take it from here. Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to the March 12th Historic Preservation Board meeting. We have a couple announcements this morning, but before that, I'm going to turn it over to Nick Kalergis from the City Attorney's Office, who will read the notice regarding lobbyist registration and swear in any members of the public wishing to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie, and good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Today's meeting of the Historic Preservation Board will be conducted in a hybrid format, with the board physically present in the temporary commission chambers and applicants, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 817-4834-7488#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 817-4834-7488. Anyone wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone. Next, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And lastly, I'd like to swear in any members of staff or the public who will be testifying today. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. We do have all 7 board members present this morning. Couple quick announcements. So this is a very short agenda. We have one regular application this morning. We also have a discussion item. Prior to the meeting, we passed out the list that we had provided previously to the board. If the board would like to discuss any specific property, we can do that at the end of the meeting. And We have one more discussion item that unfortunately is not on the agenda. This is to just give the board a brief update on the Safe Structures and Resiliency Act that was recently passed by both the State Senate and State House of Representatives. We just wanted to provide the board an update with that and all any members of the public interested. We also passed out a map. That map will be specific to that discussion. And with that, we can get started. We have no requests for continuances this morning. We do have the approval of the February minutes. Do any board members have corrections to make, or do we have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Okay. Passes. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the first regular application. This is HPB 230590. These are citywide digital information kiosks. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for digital information kiosks to be installed in the right-of-way. So we provided the background in this report as we went over briefly at the last meeting. This was how this came to be in terms of the RFP that was issued and ultimately the approval of a contract by our mayor and city commission. So each of these kiosks stands 8 foot 4 inches tall, is 3 feet 1.5 inches wide and just over 1 foot in depth. These kiosks will contain wayfinding information on our cultural institutions, as well as some emergency response type of technology included. These kiosks will also feature digital advertising that the advertising does need to be authorized and approved by the city manager. There's very specific things in the contract about the types of advertising that can be introduced on these. So this was last reviewed by the board at the December 2023 meeting. And during that meeting, the board did request that the applicant look at the design and further refine the design in a manner that was more unique and more appropriate to the city's historic districts and the identity and character of the city. Since that time, the applicant has hired architect Bill Lane, and we've met with the whole team to look at further refined, more slightly more interesting, unique type of design for the actual housing of the kiosks. Staff does believe that these will be one of a kind. We do not believe these are located in any other city. They've also provided us with some potential color options that they're going to present today. While we think that that is an interesting aspect because color is so important in this city's architectural history, we did gear more toward the more neutral backdrop. We were concerned that anything that was overly designed or too vibrant might actually detract from our beautiful historic architecture. So we are supportive of the currently proposed design. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Larkin, who represents the applicant, unless you have any questions for me.
Yeah, I had a quick question about the move from 11 to 9, because in the staff report it said there were 11. What?
Yeah, and I think the applicant is okay. Currently refining the specific locations. So there were three locations that were actually removed, and an additional one that was introduced, I think, on 5th and Washington. So there would be two on Washington at this point. And I know they've met with certain community groups. I believe they've met with the Collins Park Neighborhood Association, where one of these was previously proposed. That one has been removed. But I can let the applicant go into more detail with regard to refining the proposed locations.
Sure. So, good morning, Mr. Chairman, Board Member, Staff. Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Here is the applicant. With me today is Anna Behrman with the applicant, Marissa Crudell with the applicant. William Lane, William Architecture, and my colleague Emily Balter. We are very appreciative of the opportunity to come before you all again in order to address many of the questions and comments that you all raised at the December hearing. Since that hearing, we have worked with Commissioner Bott on a citywide mailed notice, which is quite unprecedented for an HPV application, but it happened, and notices went out to all property owners and business owners within the city. We've met with numerous neighborhood associations, bids, stakeholders, abutting property owners and businesses, and city staff to take everyone's comments into consideration and answer questions. Also, Ike retained my friend Bill Lane, who is famous for the lifeguard stands that he designed throughout our whole city, to study and reimagine the kiosk for something that is contextual to our local historic districts. We hope that the 9 locations before you all today exhibit the effort of this team and show what a great addition this will be for the city. Now I'd like to bring up Anna, and she's going to walk you through the rest of the presentation, followed by Bill.
Thank you to the board for the opportunity to present to you today. My name is Anna Behrman, and I am a development director at Ike Smart City. Because there's a few members of the board that were not here for my December presentation, I am going to just do a very, very quick recap about the company and the product before moving into the changes that Michael Larkin just mentioned from our previous application. So by way of background, Ike Smart City has been in business since 2015. We have been singularly focused since our launch in Denver on evolving the interactive kiosk experience, investing heavily in our hardware and our software to create the most technologically advanced platform available, and refining our work through extensive work in cities. We have positive partnerships with 17 cities nationwide, including in the city of Miami and Coral Gables, where we launched in 2019 and 2021. And we've actually been selected in every competitive RFP that we've ever participated in that has resulted in this type of technology being installed in the public right-of-way. A big differentiator about our company is our expert and vertically integrated team. We handle all aspects of the program in-house, so we've built a proprietary software in-house, which allows us to be extremely nimble and reactive to the needs of our city partners. We handle the advertising sales component in-house, and we also do construction project management in-house. Everything happens within the OBM team. The goals of Ike are to drive discovery of small local businesses, and provide information to promote those small local businesses, to enhance mobility through real-time transit information and multimodal trip planning capabilities, and then also to drive equity through a suite of social services applications that we have on the kiosk. Like I mentioned, we are live in 17 cities nationwide, including many in South Florida. We are in Miami and Coral Gables. We are launching in Aventura this year. We're in Tampa, and then we're also in other major cities across the country like Houston, Atlanta, and Phoenix, Arizona. In terms of our experience in South Florida, we have had a great experience having Ike installed in Coral Gables and in Miami. In Coral Gables specifically, we started with a deployment on the Miracle Mile of just 4 kiosks, and the usage was so significant and the program was so successful that the city manager allowed us to expand that network from 4 to 10 kiosks. And so now you can see we have additional kiosks off of the mile. And then in the city of Miami, our contract is for 150 kiosks. If you have, been driving through the city recently along Brickell, Biscayne, you've definitely seen these kiosks. We're citywide, Coconut Grove, Overtown, Wynwood. And we work with all of the local bids there to manage the content. So each screen within the city, within each neighborhood, is unique to that specific neighborhood's needs. A little bit of background on how we've gotten to this point in Miami Beach. So we won an RFP in December of 2022, and then our agreement with the city was approved in June of 2023 by the City Commission, and we signed our agreement in July. And then in December, we presented to this board. We were, given some feedback, and now we're here to share the updates that we've made to our proposal. One of the big pieces of feedback that we received in December was community outreach and the need to make sure that, you know, the neighborhood groups were supportive of our application, as well as the adjacent property owners. And so, as Michael mentioned, we did send out that citywide mailer. I hope you received it, to each household and business within the city of Miami Beach. And then additionally, we have completed quite a bit of community outreach and actually received letters of support, which you should have copies of, from the Washington Avenue bid, the Lincoln Road bid, the Collins Park Neighborhood Association, MDPL, not only on their 1211 blog, but they just posted yesterday another supportive post about our kiosk. Oolite Arts on Lincoln Road, a local gallery, Wolfsonian FIU, Fiena Group, the Ritz-Carlton, Kimpton Anglers, and Queen Miami Beach. We did reach out to each adjacent property owner to a proposed kiosk location. If they're not listed here, we probably did not hear back, but we're always willing to meet, you know, if they have interest in meeting with us and learning more about the project. Oh, and we also presented to, just yesterday, the Transportation Committee. I do want to mention that because that was something that was requested in the last meeting, and we also did present to the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association. In terms of content standards, Debbie mentioned this already, but we have certain things that you will never see on the kiosk. Those are things like things that are false, misleading, obscene, illegal, tobacco, firearms, sexual services, anything political, medical marijuana. And then the city manager has the ability to add any category and request removal within 24 hours of notice to our company. This is all outlined in our agreement with the city, and so it's something that we are bound by. I am going to pass it over to William Lane to walk you through the refined design and options. I do want to mention that, you know, the scope that we gave him was slightly limited in that we wanted to ensure that the reasons we were selected in the RFP were still, you know, part of our product, and that is that these have been tested for hurricane speed winds of up to 165 miles per hour. Flooding up to 18 inches. They're built for the outdoor environment, and they're slim so that they don't take up precious sidewalk space more than they need to. And so those were the things that we wanted to stay the same, but we also wanted to create something and have William Lane create something that was unique to the aesthetic of Miami Beach. And so that is what he will present to you today.
Good morning, William Lane, architect. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and present some ideas we had for the kiosk. One of the things, as Anna was saying, is that we were limited. We didn't want to extend the kiosk too much, so we limited ourselves to 4 inches. The reason being is that we also didn't want to intrude upon the overall sidewalk space and what was available. So we began with looking at some different shapes that we thought could help. We wanted to primarily look at the silhouette and see if we could develop something that might be more unique to the beach. We felt that the initial prototype was a little bit static, so we wanted to add some movement to the overall outline of the kiosk, again, staying within the limitations of the 4-inch and at the same time respecting the base design and some of the components that they've already established. So we decided out of this particular version, where we basically did a little bump out in the top and at the bottom, again, creating some kind of flow that would be a little bit more interesting than that very monumental static one that you see in the city of Miami or in, I guess, Coral Gables. So we're looking at, other variations. We introduced some color on this more uniform prototype, and we felt that in appropriate locations, this might be a little bit fun to include. We would probably, maintain a more neutral charcoal gray background in locations where there might be a lot of noise. And what I mean by that is just visual noise and looking at these kiosks in places not, like New York, they tend to be very minimal, and they have very neutral palettes. So we understand that component and how important that is in terms of not adding a lot of, again, noise or activity, color. So, but we felt that here in Miami Beach, given the scale and the nature of the beach, and maybe they're, you know, it's a resort town, we felt that there might be perhaps an opportunity for some whimsy and some color. So this was our first sort of rendition. And then we went further and developed a little bit more sculptural prototype where we, the particular extensions or plugins, we made a little bit more sculptural. We gave them some depth. We added maybe an inch so that they became more than just extensions of the design, but actual components that could bring in perhaps a sculptural effect. So again, here we have the same neutral background and the little bit more sculpted profile. We then, of course, went a little bit further with that and developed some color types. And with this in mind, we thought, if anything, this might be something might happen once or twice, and it would be a form of customizing the prototype and could add another layer of statement to the design. And it would be, of course, located in whatever site would be most appropriate and would, you know, be what it is. So that's, I believe, sort of the basics of our design process.
And I know that we're short on, or that I'm running out of time, but I'm happy to continue with the presentation or try to kind of get to the end of it. This is the same kind of information as before, the kiosk specifications, which I think it was already outlined, the height and width and depth of the kiosk. And they're built for the outdoor environment, which I mentioned before. You know, they can operate from negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit height to 120 degrees Fahrenheit, hurricane speed winds. There's shatterproof tempered glass. We also have very extensive maintenance obligations in our agreement with the city. We will be visiting these 5 days a week to make sure that they are clean and in like new condition. Like new is actually the terminology that's used in our agreement with the city. And so they will be kept very clean during events like Art Basel and F1. We will visit to clean those kiosks 7 days a week. So we have an elevated maintenance obligation during events of that nature. In terms of illumination, the kiosks dim. They have a sensor inside of them. They dim at night, and they can also be manually adjusted to the level of brightness that the city feels comfortable with. But automatically, they do, based on ambient light, dim during the evening hours and then get brighter during the day so that they are visible. The kiosks have two modes of operation. Passive mode, when someone walks up to the screen, it's going through a loop of content. Some of it's community content, content by the neighborhood associations, the city. We work with local artists in all of our cities to display, national and local artists, to display artwork on the screens when they're not in use. We have a team of three people that are solely dedicated to that. And then there is the commercial advertising component as well, which funds the business model and allows us to provide a revenue stream back with the city. When you tap on the screen, it goes into what we call engaged mode, and it opens an interactive suite of applications. You may notice that these look different than when we presented to the board in December. We have worked with the communications department to re-envision the look and feel of the application tiles. The font is now Miami Beach's brand font. The iconography has been confirmed by the communications department. And then we're looking at a translucent blue color palette that actually it moves a little bit when you're interacting with it. It almost looks like waves or clouds. The suite of applications, we have discovery applications like shop, eat and drink, arts and culture. This is going to pull all of the local businesses, shops, and museums and galleries into the kiosk, sorted based on proximity to that kiosk location. It is completely free to be included in these listings. We pull from a series of APIs to automatically pull that into the kiosk. You can see photos, reviews, and send directions from the kiosk to get to those locations to really drive business to the local options in the city. In terms of transit, real-time departure and arrival information for local transit, including trolleys and small micro-mobility options like bike share, will all be available on the kiosk, unified into our transit application. And then we also have, you know, an event list that we can work with each neighborhood association to pull all of the local events in the area, sorted by date. All of the information on the kiosk can be transferred from the kiosk to a user's phone to take it on their way. It's a discovery tool that's intended to be used in partnership with your phone without elevated placement by Google and Yelp and things of that nature, driving the narrative of what makes Miami Beach special. One other thing I want to note, we did work with the Miami Design Preservation League on an Art Deco walking tour with our software team. So this will be a custom application that plots out Art Deco landmarks within the city and allows a user to transfer that information from the kiosk to their phone and go on an interactive walking tour of all of the Art Deco landmarks that MDPL is highlighting. And as you walk the tour, it will pull up on your phone photos of the landmark you're looking at and then information about that landmark. And so that's something that MDPL is really excited about. There's a public safety component to the kiosk, an emergency call button, security cameras with a 14-day DVR that can be accessed by the local police for emergency incidents. And then the ability to take over the screen with real-time emergency alerts that come from FEMA, populated by the integrated public alert and warning system. This will automatically take over the screen if there is a severe weather event, active shooter, Amber Alert, etc. And then I mentioned this before. Here is just a list of the different arts institutions that we have and artists that we have collaborated with nationwide. In Miami, for example, we've worked with Wynwood Walls, the Perez Art Museum, the Adrian Arsh Center, local artists such as Eileen Seitz and Coconut Grove to display artwork on the kiosk screens to create an engaging mix in the loop. And then here are some photos of examples from other cities. Moving into the renderings, I will just flip through these and just mention the support that we have for each location. As was mentioned before, we had three locations that we received feedback from the board in the last meeting that there was not support for, and we have removed those from the list. So one was at Indian Creek Drive and 41st because there was not a lot of pedestrian activity. That has since been removed. On Collins, right adjacent to Bayoli, because the sidewalk was too thin, we removed that location. And then also on Ocean Drive across the street from the Betsy Hotel, we removed that location. Ocean Drive did submit a letter last night stating that they are supportive of the location at Ocean and 10th. Hopefully you guys have received that, but that their previous letter of opposition, they've rethought the letter of opposition and they're supportive of the location that MDPL also supports. So because, and then we did add a location on Washington Avenue. Troy from the Washington Avenue bid was very adamant that, you know, the bid really loves this technology. And so any locations that are removed, he'd love to see on Washington. And so we did add an additional location on Washington, which was in your packet. So first, we have a location at Collins Avenue and 34th Street. This is supported by Faena Group. Collins Avenue and 22nd. This is supported by the Collins Park Neighborhood Association. Lincoln Road and Washington Avenue. This is supported by both the Lincoln Road and Washington Avenue bid. Collins Avenue and Lincoln Road. This is supported by the Ritz-Carlton. Collins Avenue and 16th Street. This is supported by the Lowe's Hotel. Ocean Drive and 10th. This is supported by Ocean Drive Association and MDPL. Washington Avenue and 10th Street. This is supported by the Washington Avenue bid, as well as the Wolfsonian FIU and Queen. Ocean Drive and 5th. We We didn't make contact with the adjacent property owner, although we attempted. Washington Avenue and 6th, this is supported by the Kempton Anglers.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to allow additional time? I've extended it a couple times.
Well, I think
I'm finished.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm complete. Thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions.
So are there any questions from the board for the applicants? Okay. We'll start with you, Brian. You can go down. We'll go down this way. And you'll just collect these questions. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a question on the different studies that you did. This is mainly for Mr. Lane. And I know Mr. Lane is the visionary behind the lifeguard stations on Miami Beach. And so I was just curious if the hardware had not been a limitation, how would these recommendations potentially have changed, and what were the recommendations of the hardware that might have prevented some creativity?
Just one second. We're going to collect a few more questions, and then you'll come up. We'll just go down the line. Haskell?
In looking at the designs, you started off with, you know, the pastel colors, and that looked really good. And the final design that you had, I didn't particularly like at all, with the big black band at the top, and then, a right angle black on the bottom and another right angle black on the top. To me, that is not a design at all that I could approve.
Haskell, you want to? Did you have some questions?
Ms. Berman, I have a couple of questions. You were talking about Coral Gables and establishing success. What is your criteria for success, number one? And secondly, you talked about the commercial revenue stream. And could you elaborate on that and how the city participates with you on that? Thank you.
Ms. Berman? My question is related to the list of events and how often the information is updated and how you maintain those kiosks relevant to what's going on.
Thank you again for the presentation and for showing the neighborhood outreach. Was there any opposition? I know there were some updates there, but did anyone file any opposition? And you know, it seems to be pretty spaced out. There's kind of a cluster of 7, 8, and 9, and I'm wondering why. But I love the walking tour with MDPL. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then just on the question, this is piggybacking off of Elizabeth's point as well, on the question of kind of the curatorial viewpoint on the artwork. I'm just kind of want to get a little more detail on who is going to be doing that curation exactly, which organizations or institutions here in Miami Beach will be a part of that, because I think it's pretty important that that is locally sourced.
And then my questions were kind of follow-up. They kind of piggyback on some of the other questions. One was kind of the Art Deco walking tour. I didn't see a separate app for that. I was wondering, like, how one would find it and to make sure it's not, like, too hidden. And then I noticed that one moved right in front of the Wolfsonian, which is, you know, obviously is one of the most active programming institutions of any of the kiosks in historic districts. How would you find and program with the Wolfsonian so that it can amplify their messaging? I think that's it. Anybody else have anything to add?
Just one other question. It really has nothing to do with design or location. A lot of people wonder how many different ads are going to be on a kiosk. Every picture that you show shows like Ocean Drive and a generic picture, but that's not what people are going to see when they walk by. There's going to be an ad, and how often that ad changes before somebody touches the screen.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think what you'd like for us to do is have the public hearing first and then come back and we'll answer all the questions sequentially, or how would you like
no,
us to
do that? Well, that you'd address the questions
right
now, and then if there's some more back, yeah, that would
okay.
be really helpful.
So we're going to start with Brian's question, and that's more toward Bill. So,
is there any way to pull back up the design?
So,
can you please get close to the mic when you're ready?
Yeah. Anna, why don't you take the clicker and click.
You want the beginning?
Yeah, please. Perfect. So, to answer your question, Mr. Ehrlich, we did try quite a few other options, and what we found was in order to get that much, let's say, more impacting form, it required us to move quite a bit outside of that 4-inch limitation. So we
just – can you just explain the 4-inch limitation, exactly what you mean by that? I'm not sure that I understand.
IKEA wanted to stay within their prototype. I guess they – it's something that –
So you're saying plus 4 inches –
Plus 4 inches, yeah, to the left.
But no more than.
Not more than. And I know that.
What was the reasoning on just the 4-inch?
Well, for instance, if we were to bring in a more complex curve, it just got very busy. I felt that it got a little bit dated, that it would read as something kind of decorative. It would then add to what I refer to as noise. I really did feel as an architect, I've always kind of struggled between these kind of items being part of the landscape and either being so uniform and minimal that you really just see the graphics. But I think in Miami Beach, there is, again, an opportunity for something that's a little bit more, you know, tweaked, so to speak. So when we did do those little things, it was more of a – it wasn't really something that we were trying to pick up aspects of Miami Beach design, Art Deco. We were really looking at it in a very simple graphic way where we were creating a motion rather than just a verticality with a couple of angles. So the idea was to very subtly bring in a bit of graphic motion within the limitations that we had.
So, and then Brian.
Just, can I ask a follow-up to that?
Mm-hmm.
Could you take us a little bit through your process of how you designed, and I guess with a particular focus on designing within a historic district in terms of making something that, you know, felt relevant with,
right.
I think that's like one issue that I want to understand and to get behind this proposal. I wanna know that there is a clear kind of connection, understanding to the historic district, to the scale, to the character of these neighborhoods in Miami Beach, and then that there is some sort of a new take on that, right? And so I think we're all, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think that we all, you know, we're a very collaborative board, and we want to embrace something that's new and something that's innovative and something tells a kind of a new story or like a tweak on an old story. And so I'm really curious about that.
Well, I've always been a fan of ornament, and I do think that ornament is something that does characterize Art Deco. They've taken, let's say, a very minimal box, so to speak, and they've added extra features to it, whether they're reliefs or they're eyebrows, but it's typically where you might do something with a conventional shape and add something to it. So maybe that's, you know, the primary thing that we saw. The shape itself is really static. It was just a straight slab. And it was a struggle between doing something that might come out as being over time kitsch or a little tired. We wanted it to stay fresh, and I feel that the initial prototype, maybe it falls into, you know, the realm of minimal sculpture and therefore can fit into anything like Sixth Avenue in New York or something where you're dealing with other urban elements like bus shelters. And, you know, in that case, a lot of these features are often dealt with in a very minimal way, and they're meant to sort of disappear. So we wanted to do something, but not something that, again, first of all, went, you know, beyond the realm of what we could do with the prototype, but something, again, to, in a very graphic way, perhaps like some of the architecture here, where there's movement. So it was as simple as that. It was a struggle between something that would disappear and be quiet and something that would add some kind of gesture. And I think furthering that, and it's interesting what Mr. Breslin said, which is that we came back to a couple of slides that we put in yesterday, and we too felt that there were some things that we had developed, right, that maybe, let me see, I can go back to the image. We felt that this particular image was useful in that we kept the basic shape, but in select locations we could add some pastels, you know, turquoise, violet, pink, melon, or, you know, just something to brighten it up. So in those places where we could add another layer, we thought color would be appropriate. I agree that these here might get a little busy and distracting, and just, you know, I keep referring to the idea of visual noise.
And then I think Brian's second question more involved the curatorial choices, yeah. Anna, for like the art, like will we collaborate with the local museums? And
sure. So we have a team of three people that are exclusively focused on partnerships with artists, both national and local partnerships, as well as nonprofits, to display the artwork or information about that nonprofit free of cost on our network of kiosks. It is really up to the city and the city's preference on whether that be limited to only local or national, and we are happy either way. This is really meant to be a benefit that is part of our kind of proposal and not something that we, you know, feel strongly that we have to display our national partners on Miami Beach kiosks. In the city of Miami, we work with both national and Miami artists. We also actually display Miami Beach artists there as well. But I've heard in every presentation I've been in that in Miami Beach, it is the strong preference that it be limited to local Miami Beach artists and cultural institutions, because you have so many and there is no, you know, need to bring in anything national, and we are completely aligned with that. We've already had a conversation with Wolfsonian, actually, and we are running content for them on our Miami network until we get our Miami Beach network live. So we're very excited to work with them to curate these kiosks. And we'll be working with, you know, we'll work with the city and our team that is dedicated to this. We'll work with the city to understand who we should be reaching out to in terms of the local arts organizations and individual artists to make sure that we are representing the arts community appropriately. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Okay. And then Ray had a couple of questions. First was the more color, the better. He likes more color rather than the more black. And is that an option for us to pursue?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Those ones were great with the color. That really says Miami Beach.
Ray, we need you on mic.
Sorry. Yeah, that black was just... It just didn't work for me. I don't know about the rest of the board, but it didn't work for me at all.
Sure. And then, Ray, second question was how many ads?
Yeah, great question. So the loop has 8 slides in it. Each one is 10 seconds long. One of those slides is always dedicated to the city for its use for, you know, community programming, city programming, plus any unsold space, which there's almost always unsold space other than during, you know, large events like Art Basel or F1. And then in addition to that, so then the remaining 7 slides are available for sale. If the city doesn't want to utilize that unsold space, that's where we start to display that art content, content for nonprofits, neighborhood organization content. And if you go to Miami or Coral Gables and drive around, you'll see that there's usually about 2 to 3 ads running in the ad loop at any given time. And the remainder of the content is either information from the Miami DDA or the Coconut Grove bid or artwork, information about nonprofits. And so it really is an engaging mix of content. Is that an okay answer?
Sure. Next, as Haskell had two questions. The first was, you had mentioned in Coral Gables along Miracle Mile that they were successful, so the city manager asked you to do more. Then he asked, what were your collective criteria for success in Coral Gables?
Great question. So we installed on the Miracle Mile as part of their streetscape improvement project. So they were re-envisioning the Miracle Mile. They wanted to make it a more pedestrian-oriented experience for people that were visiting the mile, draw attention to all of the local options in the area. And so there kind of were two main keys to success. One was usage. So the kiosks on average in the city of in the Miami area in general are getting 300 uses per kiosk per month. We do collect analytics on the kiosk that we provide to the city. It's all anonymous and aggregated information on kiosk usage, as well as pedestrian counts and things of that nature, air quality monitoring. And so the usage was one of the factors, and the other was the revenue stream to the city of Coral Gables. You know, the kiosks are, there is a minimum guarantee on a per kiosk basis, and it's a kind of a greater of concept. Same thing in Miami Beach. I can get into the details when that question comes up. But the revenue potential was really there as well. And so it felt like a win-win. The kiosks were being used. They were generating a stream of revenue for the city. They were getting great feedback from the community. And so, you know, we work with the local bid there to post content. And so it felt like something that the city manager wanted to expand. And so we did amend that contract to allow for that extension.
So Haskell's related second question was the commercial revenue stream. Exactly what is the split in Miami Beach?
So in Miami Beach, the city receives the greater of a minimum guarantee on a per kiosk basis, or a percentage of the gross revenue. That percentage is 40% of gross revenue, or $20,000 per kiosk in year one with 2% annual escalations, whichever is higher. We estimate, based on our projected revenue, which we are uniquely qualified to project that revenue because we've been operating in Coral Gables since 2019 and Miami since 2021, that the city will receive about $1.5 million a year from the program, which equates to $30 million over the term. And we've actually already delivered a $1 million prepayment to the city for this project as a deposit against future advertising revenue. So the city has already received $1 million from this project.
Okay, next was Elizabeth. She wanted to know a list of events, like how often does that rotate? Is that about right, Elizabeth? Like the rotation, how often?
Right, and how often it's updated so like the event is over and it's not still being advertised. Mm.
So one of the greatest things about the kiosk is that all of the information is updated in real time. We don't have any manual entry as part of setting up our kiosk program. So for, you know, the business listings, for example, we're pulling from an API that pulls in all of that information automatically just by way of those businesses existing. The same thing goes for events. So we would work with the city to get an iCal link of their event list, as well as the local neighborhood organization that's relevant for that kiosk location. And as soon as it's updated on the base source where those events are held, within 60 seconds, it updates on the kiosk. And so sort of the genesis of Ike was actually in partnership with a local bid in Denver that felt like their static wayfinding signage was always outdated. Tenants would go out of business, and then the information would be outdated, and they'd have to reprint a static map. It was costly, and it was an ineffective way to display that information. And so a big part of our mission and a big part of our benefit is that all of the information is always updated in real time onto the kiosks.
Great. And then Laura's question was, there seems to be a cluster of kiosks, 7, 8, and 9.
Do you mind pulling up the map or pulling up the presentation for me? I just want to make sure I know which 3 are 7, 8, and 9.
Bless you.
Oh, gosh. My eyes are not that good.
I can't tell either.
Which 3 are those? So. The renderings.
We're getting there, Laura. The font is so small that it's hard for us to...
I know. That makes me feel old that I can't see that. Okay, so Collins and Lincoln. Collins and Lincoln, Collins and 16th, and what's the third one?
Collins in 16 and Lincoln in Washington.
So I think the three locations are Lincoln and Washington, Collins and Lincoln, and Collins and 16th. So when we're siting these kiosks, there's a lot of factors that we're looking into. One is sidewalk width, because you know there, it's been expressed to us that when there is a thin sidewalk, that that is not an ideal location for a kiosk, which we completely understand. The other is that we, by contract, must be 250 feet away from the nearest bus shelter or bus stop. And so that creates another layer of limitation on our kiosk placement. And then the other is where we have, you know, requests from the local bids for additional locations. And so, you know, the Collins and Lincoln, Collins and 16th and Washington and Lincoln are all in very, you know, commercial areas of the city. They have significantly wider sidewalks than some of the other areas of the city. And we have support from the local neighborhood organizations for those locations. And so those were all factors in selecting, you know, those three locations.
Great. And then John wanted more discussion about the Art Deco walking tour. Like, how do you intend to do that?
Right. So there is, I'm sorry if it wasn't clear from the presentation, there is a standalone application, just like the eat and drink application or the transit application, that would say Art Deco walking tour.
Oh, okay. If you, can you
that
put
you
it
would,
up?
Yeah, it would be great if I could pull it up. So it's very small, but if you look on the far left where it says, and there's like a light blue square that says Art Deco walking tour, that would live on the application tile screen.
Can you go to the application tile screen just to show me where that might be?
So
that one.
So it would look just the exact same size as these, but it would just say Art Deco walking tour, which is what you're seeing right there. The
So it'd be a different color and a different type. It would have the photograph or whatever that is in it.
Yes, it would. It would look different so that it would stand out in the application suite, and so it sort of would catch your eye a little bit more. But it would be, in terms of the shape and size, the same as the other applications. And then when you tap on it, that's when you can interact with it and transfer that information to actually take the tour. And we built, this is going to be the first time we've done this. We built this in partnership with MDPL, and our software team, you know, this is unique to Miami Beach. This isn't anywhere else.
Lindsay, you have a question?
I have a question. Somewhat clarifying, I hope. So this Art Deco walking tour icon on the, I forget what you call icon screen. I forget what you called
yeah.
it. Is, and you said that it's going to look a little bit different. So could I equate that, if I'm comparing to Miami, sorry, this is a little off the cuff, but if I'm comparing to the ones that are downtown Miami, would that be like, you know, there's the activities icon and the beaches and park icon, but then there's like the homeless icon, which looks different. It's like a green, are you homeless question mark. It stands out a little bit because it looks a little different. Is that
actually, that's that's exactly it. And if you look at, I just realized this might be a good way to describe it. If you look at the application tiles here, do you see how the Artscape concert series looks different than the rest of them? That's exactly how it would look on the home screen.
Okay, thanks. I have the benefit of having, there's one right by my office, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
Great. Mr. Chairman, I think that was, the one other question you had was the Wilsonian programming, to give an example of like how would we work with Wilsonian?
So we've already had that introductory meeting with our Director of Strategic Partnerships, Corey Favor, and Wolfsonian. And like I mentioned, we are running content for them already in the city of Miami, and then we would work with them hand in hand to figure out what they want to post. And ensure that that gets uploaded on the kiosks in Miami Beach once we launch.
And I do have one more clarifying question, because this has come up a couple times, talking about the white versus the color versus the black or the gray. What does the current iteration look like, so we're very clear? Because my understanding is there is no black. There is some gray.
This is what is being recommended by
which
staff.
Which is gray,
which
not
is
black.
Gray. And then this would be what William was saying could be in select locations if it feels appropriate. And that's really a decision that we are going to lean on you for.
And was Was there any discussion on these colors with the city in terms of what their, because they have different colors that they can use on their logo? I think one of them looks something like the blue, maybe, and there's a green, a light green.
Yeah, I can, if you don't mind. So we recently met with the team and the city's communications department. They're the department, the very talented individuals that are really responsible for the branding of the city. So I think there are some, like the font was mentioned. We also have, you know, mentioned our city logo and the font and the color scheme for that. And the screen as well. This kind of static image, it will be likely a photograph taken by our communications department. Now, with regard to the colors, so what we talked about with the city's communications department was other types of color, not necessarily the casing of the structure, but the lighting color, the home screen color in terms of that blue. They also have a lighting element on that angled portion of the base, and the idea was to do a very kind of neutral, warm color. But as you know, when we have certain events in the city, certain holidays or recognition days, you know, the city often changes our lighting, whether it's, you know, purple for Alzheimer's or pink for breast cancer awareness. So I think there's some flexibility there that I would defer to the city's communications department, but we were all very excited about maybe having the ability to change some of that. The home screen, we also have a little bit of flexibility. It will not be changing colors. What we're showing now is the blue. That could slightly be modified depending on you know, the communications input from that. This is the first time. So when we met previously, we saw the busier kind of color scheme. And we did think that that was awfully distracting in many areas. If you could go back to kind of that first color scheme, not the one that you're currently proposing. With the triangles, it had more of the geometric kind of color.
Yeah, the neon, the white with the neon.
And it was very bright. That's so, when we met with them initially, we said, you know, we really appreciate this thought of color, but we did believe that the neutral gray, and again, Ray, the black is gone.
Thank you.
I know it's shown and it's confusing on some of the imagery, but it was a neutral kind of gray color. So we initially recommended that the new, more neutral color scheme be the approved version. Now looking at the new color scheme that they presented today, which staff just received, I think it was yesterday, you know, I do think there's potential there as well, because it's still relatively, you know, neutral without having too much going on. So I think that's interesting, and I like how they referenced Leonard Horowitz. Correct me if I'm wrong, those backgrounds of those structures would not be able to change. Would be a built-in component.
Yeah, so that would be a powder-coated finish under a glass bezel. So if we selected a color for a kiosk location, that color would be the permanent color
of
that kiosk.
The only consideration there would be, well, if we go with certain colors in certain locations, does that then necessitate the background screen maybe to be a different color? Like, I don't know if we'd want the blue casing with the blue screen, because that, you know, may be somewhat awkward. So I think we, you know, depending on if the board chooses one of these colors, I think we could work with our communications team to also then slightly modify some of the screen colors. But the screen colors will be soft and translucent regardless.
And just about on that screen again, so what's below the footing is, it looks white here, but is it actually like a white metal, or is it like white?
It's a powder coated metallic aluminum.
Got it. And that is also on the edge and goes around.
It would be consistent around the entire spine, the top of the kiosk, and then the front and back below the glass screen. So everything that you're seeing that's color here, mm-hmm, would be covered in glass. and then the rest would be the powder coated aluminum.
And the foot comes in, where the foot comes in, I've seen it sometimes shown with a light and sometimes without. Does it?
There is always a light. I think that this is rendered with a warm white, which is it's not perceptible, but it would always be there would always be a lighting strip at the bottom.
So, Mr. Chairman, before we go to the public hearing, I just have a clarification to make and a point of information, if you don't mind. So the clarification is that when we went to Faena Hotel, we sought out the general manager. We thought that was the appropriate person to reach out and seek his support, and he did grant his support. But when Nizan showed up this morning, he told me he was representing Aman and the Faena Group, the actual owner of Faena Hotel, and he told me that they have overruled the general manager, that they're not in support of the kiosk close to Faena Hotel. So I apologize for that confusion, but we thought we were doing the right thing. The point of information that you all need to know is that during the public hearing, you'll hear from an objector attorney representing Outfront Media. Outfront Media is the vendor that the city has an agreement with regarding bus shelters. There is, of course, advertising on these bus shelters. For years now, Outfront Media has viewed our client as an economic competitor, a threat to their advertising revenue. As a result, they have made sure in their agreement with the city that there's a 250-foot buffer in between bus stops and bus shelters and any proposed digital kiosk. To let you all understand that distance a little bit better, a Boeing 747 is 250 feet in length. A football field is 360 feet in length, so it's about 70% of the length of a football field. In addition, they have been recycling arguments set forth most recently in a letter to you all that has been routinely rejected by the city commission and the city attorney for a period of about 2 years. These are fundamental jurisdictional questions that the city attorney has rejected. They're not properly before you all. You all don't have purview to consider questions such as those. With that, I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal, and I thank you very much for your time thus far.
Thank you. And now we have any disclosures? Oh, that's you. Let's go for it.
No, that's all right. I was going to say the same thing. Do any board members have any disclosures to make since this application was last presented?
Just that the presentation came before the Collins Park Neighborhood Association for this presentation today, and we did vote to approve it. One of the questions that we did bring up, which wasn't brought today, is why they haven't considered locations outside of parking garages and along our very long beach walk where pedestrians do congregate, why they haven't considered those locations. But that was it. Thank you.
I had a meeting with the applicant Friday before last.
I had a meeting with the applicant yesterday.
Okay, if that's it, we can open up for public comment. We have people on Zoom. We have people. We can take the people in chambers first.
Good morning, everyone. Annabelle Yopis, Executive Director at the Lincoln Road Bid. I'm here today to say we're completely supportive of these units and network being within our district. I think it'll be a much-needed elevated program for the consumer's journey. Currently, we have static, outdated directories that the moment you print, they're obsolete. They're also oversized on Lincoln Road. I know within this particular network, we don't have any on Lincoln Road on our specific bid area. We have one on our perimeter. But I think it's important to say that we feel very confident this will really help our consumers, our tenants, and also help us really amplify our messaging across the bid. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. Nisan Kazan of Ackerman, LLP, representing both the Faena Hotel as well as the Aman. And I'd first like to start by saying a couple of things. Number one, I would like to thank Michael for making his clarification on the record. He only found out this morning that ownership of the Faena Hotel is opposed to the location of the particular kiosk in front of the bazaar at 34th and Collins Avenue. As you know, Alan Faena was the visionary genius behind the creation of the Faena District, and that is central to what I'm going to talk about today. I'd also like to say I'm a big fan of Bill Lane. Bill came to me 30 years ago with his idea and designs for those lifeguard stands, which the city turned down because each one was going to cost a few thousand dollars more. And I think it worked out pretty well for Miami Beach. What I wanted to bring to your attention was that Faena is a recognized district in the city of Miami Beach, both a zoning overlay, but in addition to that, there is a streetscape design and plan that was created and approved specifically for the Faena. I think John Stewart may have been on the board at the time that was created. And I've put before you the map which shows all the properties in the Faena District. And this is everything from the boardwalk, from 32nd Street up to 35th Street on both sides of Collins Avenue and the side streets. Faena hired Raymond Jungles to do this master plan. It was approved by the city. We have an agreement with the city and a covenant to maintain it and that as well. And so it has, I think all of you are probably familiar with it, special landscaping, special paving, artistic street furniture. In fact, in the corner of 33rd Street, a sculpture commissioned by Alan Faena, which sits in the public right-of-way as well. The collection of buildings on the west side of Collins Avenue were the first and to date only buildings designed by OMA, Rem Koolhaas. This is a special area where design is very important. You know the Faena Hotel. You know of the enormous investment and care that is being taken in the development of the Amman Project and the former Versailles site, which is part of the Faena District. And this is why both are opposed to this specific location. So we'd ask you to not allow this kiosk at that location. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. We are supportive of the application, and we're thankful that they retained local architect William Lane to further customize the kiosks to fit the Miami Beach aesthetic, based on feedback from the community and HPB members. We believe with the refined design alternatives, the kiosks will have a unique aesthetic different from other municipalities. We're also really excited to partner with Ike on the Miami Beach Tours app, which will showcase historic landmarks that are nearby based on the location of the kiosk and help educate both locals and visitors about the architectural history of Miami Beach. The applicants also did reach out to adjacent property owners and have adjusted locations based upon their feedback. So we are appreciative of the continued outreach that they've done. We support the application, and we also thank them as members of Miami Design Preservation League. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We can move.
Oh. Thank you, Debbie. First, before I get started, my name is Mike Llorente with LSN Law 3800 Northeast First Avenue, representing Outfront. Two quick administrative things before I get started and get on the clock. Number one, I did not arrive prior to the time that speakers were sworn in, so I'm happy to be sworn in.
You are an attorney, so you unless you're well, I can swear you in anyway in case you do give testimony. So do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. And secondly, Mr. Chair, I would respectfully request an extra minute or two, up to 4 minutes, if that's okay with the board.
Sure, sure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay, so apparently it was Carl Fisher's idea to paint the city sidewalks red, and the goal, as the story goes, was to give visitors the impression they were walking on a red carpet. The application before you aims to clutter that red carpet with unnecessary advertising boxes. The last time the application was before you, this board expressed serious concerns about the size, scale, design, orientation of these advertising boxes. The applicant is before you today with a substantially similar, almost identical design. They changed the color and added two bump outs, and they're pretending it's a whole new machine. But it's not. It's the same machine creating the same obstruction. And this is no knock on Mr. Lane, who acknowledged during his presentation that he was instructed that Ike wanted to stay within their prototype. So we have the same machine creating the same obstruction. Regarding dimensions, the box got bigger. It is now 8 inches wider, creating a larger unnecessary obstruction all throughout the historic district. Now, I ask you to consider for a minute whether these advertising boxes add to or detract from the historic character of this city. The answer, I think, is obvious. Everything about these machines, size, scale, orientation, placement, everything, is incompatible with the historic district. The machines fail to satisfy many of the criteria that this board is required to consider. So why allow them? Why allow them? What will these machines offer residents and visitors that might offset the negative impact to the historic areas? What I think has been lost in much of this conversation today is whether these machines are necessary, whether they're necessary at all, or more specifically, whether they're necessary in the city's historic districts. Ike mentioned earlier, boasted, that some of their machines get 10 impressions per day at the city of Miami. Assuming each impression is about a minute long, that means they're used about 10 minutes a day. You know what they're playing the other 1,430 minutes of the day? Well, in the city of Miami, they've been playing illegal full motion television commercials. So I ask you, board members, once again, are these machines necessary? Are they accretive to the city's historic district? Because if they're not, I'm not sure we need to go much further than that. I also would like to respond to one of the comments made earlier by Mr. Larkin. I do represent Outfront Media. I have nothing against outdoor advertising. The issue we have with these machines speaks not just to their competition, but to their legality. It's one thing to have competition from a legitimate source. It's another thing to have competition from machines that are patently illegal. This is not just my position that under Florida law, standalone kiosk machines may not be installed in the public right-of-way, period. The county attorney also agrees. During the January 19th, 2022 County Commission meeting, then Commissioner Sosa asked point blank, kiosks are illegal if they are in the right-of-way and are a standalone by themselves. Am I right or wrong? The county's chief zoning attorney replied, yes, that is correct. The reasoning here is simple. Section 337.408 of the Florida statutes lists six devices that may be installed with advertising in the right-of-way. These are the things we've come to expect as part of our urban landscape: bus shelters, bus benches, waste receptacles, pay telephones, etc. What's not on this list? Kiosks. Not on the list. Therefore, they may not be installed in the right-of-way. It's really that simple. Now, Ike may argue here, as they did in the city of Miami, that their machines are on this list because they are modular news racks. This, of course, is a preposterous position that sadly was accepted in the city of Miami. But I cannot believe that the city of Miami Beach would accept such a preposterous position, which leaves us with the inescapable conclusion, board members, that these machines are illegal and that they are wholly incompatible with the city's historic districts. They are not necessary in the city's historic districts. They add clutter. They add distractions. They create obstructions. We urge you to keep these machines out of the historic districts. Thank you very much, board members and Mr. Chair, for the extra time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Going to Zoom, we have Troy Wright. Troy?
Hi, Troy. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. Troy Wright, the executive director of the Washington Avenue Business Improvement District. I think more than anyone else, Washington Avenue sees the need to enhance the avenue with information directories and provide a better sense of direction for our hotels, restaurants, clubs, retails, museums, and activations. I think we've done a good job leading up to this point. However, I believe with the kiosk, we can do even more. The reality is we have the largest number and the most diverse businesses in a compacted area on Miami Beach. Therefore, I believe as Washington Avenue goes, so does Miami Beach. Historically, if you look at the heyday of Miami Beach, it was always led by Washington Avenue. So this kiosk would assist our goal in providing tourists what they need and stimulate business growth. So the bid is in full support of the Ike kiosk. And I believe, and like I've said so many times before, if another area does not want the kiosk, Washington Avenue would gladly take them because we believe it will be an enhancement and important to the avenue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Johan Moore.
Good morning, Johan. Do you swear the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank
Good
you.
Morning,
2 minutes.
Board members and staff. I'll start by saying I loathe these. I loathe them in New York. We're on Fifth Avenue. There's a 20-foot sidewalk. They glare at night. They are smashable, but the image does remain. To the previous attorney's comments, can I stand at one of these and pull up the Miami Herald or Miami New Times and read articles? If not, I don't think they're a newsstand. My two practical questions, and I'm sorry if I missed this detail, are these accessible from both sides, functional from both sides? If not, I would propose that the various businesses that seem so enamored of these place them against their facades in an appropriate spot so that they are accessible from one side rather than cluttering the sidewalk. My practical question is that some of them seem to be on the, how shall I say, FPNA sidewalk or side of the avenue. If that is in fact the case, these were not brought before my neighborhood association. And if that detail is in fact correct, then I would ask that these proceedings not proceed until my neighborhood association has had an opportunity to weigh in. Thank you very much.
Flamingo Park. Okay, our next speaker is Anne-Marie Ferreira de Mello.
Good morning, Anne-Marie. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Anna-Marie Ferreira de Mello, the president of the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association that represents the interests of condominiums and hotels from 24th to 63rd Street along Collins Avenue and Indian Creek Drive. Our current membership includes more than 65 active properties in this area. This item was presented at the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association on Wednesday, March 6th. And the following Monday, yesterday evening, the executive board met to review the members' collective recommendation and provide a position on behalf of the association. There are valid concerns of potential cluttering of already slim walkways that are congested with poles and signs throughout the Mid-Beach area, as well as the potential for the city to be liable for locating the device near transit stops. Additionally, the design that was promised to be unique to Miami Beach seemed fairly similar to the other models and didn't warrant a two-month delay in presenting to the community. We felt that was very disingenuous. In January, we sent a list of questions to the applicant, and we were told that the presentation needed to be delayed month after month until last week, where we had little time to debrief. Yesterday, we received a letter of support from the FIANA, from the manager that was referenced in today's meeting. And the majority of the MBNA board of directors, because of that letter and because of respect for our members, voted in favor of these digital information kiosks and for the installation of that one in particular. Hearing now that the owner was not in favor and that the Aman, another one of our one of the properties within this area, is also not in favor, I feel that it's necessary that I that the email that was sent this morning from MBNA be reconsidered and not considered in favor of the application, but I rather abstain from providing support for this application until the board of directors has an opportunity to hear from our direct members and other properties that are impacted, especially because it was a split division, even though the majority were in favor. We also request that the installation of any future devices be presented to the community within 30 days prior to being presented to any of the city boards or committees. Mid-Beach area is an incredible area. The beach walk is very much visited and utilized. There's two large parks with lots of space where even device two that is a little more visible could be considered. And then Indian 41st Street, the heart of the Mid Beach area, we shared this as well. The corner that they were considering, Indian Creek and 41st, right now has a new pedestrian pathway where we have videos, even though it's not continuous and the city is still exploring how to make it continuous, hundreds and hundreds of pedestrians are walking across that area and going into 41st Street. And we want to uplift our business community locally. And we think that those areas are just more appropriate than Collins Avenue and Indian Creek. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Alex.
Hi, Alex. Please state your full name for the record.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. My name's Alex Hurwitz.
Can I swear you in first? Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. I am born and raised in Miami. I grew up in the heyday of the 90s, going to Washington, Michigan, Lincoln Road, enjoying the history and the true character of this place that I call home. I moved to New York City after college, and I lived there during the time in which all of these digital kiosks have been implemented into the streets. And I can tell you, basically, it's used by homeless people just to use the internet, which is fine. They should have access to, you know, information and technology, which I totally get and support. But at the same time, these are monstrosities on the street. I now live back in Miami Beach. Every single day, I walk from the Venetian over to Lincoln Road, through Lincoln Road, all the way to Washington Avenue, where I take I use a local business there, a local Pilates studio that I adore. And I can't even walk down the street without avoiding, you know, all these obstructions. The street is tiny. I mean, the street's a mess, and it's not these kiosks, in my opinion, as a resident here who is trying to use local businesses, is not going to make the difference. The shops on Washington are smoke shops and cell phone stores and, you know, basically just bikini shops, which, you know, obviously we want to support our local businesses, but that's not the issue here. The issue is that these are, this is part of a larger agenda globally to convert cities into smart cities, which quite frankly have not benefited the people in any sort of capacity. New York City is like this. There's nothing that's benefiting any of the residents by having these digital kiosks. They're ugly. They are an obstruction. They take away from the charm and the beauty of Miami Beach.
Alex, your 2 minutes are up.
And it's quite frankly just a shame, and shameful that this got passed.
Hi, Alex. For the benefit of the board, we were wanting to know where you reside.
Sorry, can you hear me again?
Yes.
Thank you. I live on the Venetian on Belle Isle, but I use Lincoln Road every single day.
Okay.
And shop from the stores there. I walk through there. I walk on Washington every single day.
Okay. Our next speaker is Daniel Zayas.
Hi, Daniel. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Daniel Zayas. I am the marketing manager for the Jewish Museum of Florida, FIU. We're located on 3rd in Washington. I believe last month is when Marissa from Ike reached out to me and asked me if we were interested in publishing an advertisement on their already existing boards, free of charge, as we're a nonprofit. As you imagine, we're a small nonprofit museum, so marketing budget can be kind of limited. So this was a great benefit to us to enhance our visibility across the city. And we're really appreciative of that. We are in support of these kinds of initiatives. The arts and culture community is one that needs as much support as possible. And
You know, this partnership with Ike really has done us a lot of favors and has been really successful for us. So we're hopeful that that we can proceed with some of these throughout the city. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Ann Bloom.
Hi, Ann. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. My name is Ann Bloom. I live at the Deco Plage. I spent 27 years practicing law in downtown Chicago, where we did not have any directional kiosks. And it was amazing. Everybody still managed to get where they needed to go. I am unfortunately speaking out against these kiosks, though I do want to acknowledge the effort made to redesign them to in an effort to be consistent with the historic nature of our beautiful and very unique city. But I still think that the design misses the mark. And I also think that some of the locations are problematic. So let me speak quickly to the locations. The three, I think we were calling them the cluster locations, Collins and Lincoln, Lincoln and Washington, Collins and 16th. I live at Lincoln and Collins, and I can tell you that between the light poles, the garbage cans, and tourists with their face in their phones walking around, the delivery people, the bicycles, the scooters, and everything else going on, these kiosks are going to be causing danger both to the people on the sidewalk, but also really people crossing the street. You know, they're already looking at their phones, and you're going to be providing them more information on their phones to look at, and at the same time providing moving images to people who are driving. And I think that's a huge problem. As to the colors, I'm interested. I think that's an interesting concept, but the colors being discussed, I mean, the red carpet sidewalk, and I didn't know that detail, so I'm appreciative of that. The colors being discussed are going to really clash with it. So not only do you have an electronic box, essentially a billboard, that is inconsistent itself with a historic area, but the colors that are going to be used are going to clash with those locations. And one other quick fact, or potentially two, but I don't know, and I may have missed this detail. I don't know if there are electric outlets on these kiosks. I'm already troubled seeing the homeless essentially camping out next to the available outlets on Lincoln Road, you know, so that they can power up their phones. And, you know, I understand the social implications of we don't want to be inhumane, but by the same token, we don't want really more homeless right outside our door. You know, I have questions about that as well. Other than that, my comments really would mirror those in opposed to the kiosks. I will add, as I was asked, and I don't know if Irene Bigger, the president of Art Deco Neighborhood Association, will make it on to this call this morning, but they have been, I was asked to state that they are opposed to these kiosks. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Isabel.
Hi, Isabel. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Isabel?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes, I do. My full name is Isabel Oakley.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, I am a resident of Miami Beach. And I would like to say that I am not supportive of these kiosks. My main concern is about the cameras and about privacy for community members. I'm quite concerned about residents of Miami Beach being recorded without our consent. It feels a little intrusive and unethical. I understand about the security feature, but in the presentation, the cameras seem to blend in with the design. They are not clearly indicated. Many people would not know that they're being recorded. This feels a little immoral. Furthermore, if the main goal is simply to deter crime or deter harm to the kiosks, the cameras should stand out so that those who are considering committing crimes should know that they are on camera and not act accordingly. Ideally, can the kiosks simply not record us? Is there a way to opt out of being recorded if we choose not to? Or at least can the cameras be clearly indicated and can the kiosks clearly tell us about how that footage is going to be used? All right, that's it.
Thank you. Oh, You have a question? Isabel, if you're still there, I think one of our board members have a question for you.
Hi, Isabel. Same question that we had earlier. For the board's benefit, where in Miami Beach do you live?
Yes, I live on 12th and Pennsylvania by Flamingo Park.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Irene Bigger.
Good morning, Irene. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. Yes, I appreciate Anne for mentioning us. I was in another meeting. We are opposed. As president of the Art Deco Neighborhood Association, I represent residents in our community and our neighborhood. One of our missions is to protect the historic heritage of our community. And I believe that the kiosks would be out of place, you know, metal, glass, everything, and especially, you know, with the height. I don't believe it's necessary to have these. We have, you know, portable kiosks that we hold in our hands, hold our mobile phones. I believe also, and although I don't know the detail of the legalities, I believe that this form of advertising is not allowed. And I'm sure if I wasn't on before, if somebody had mentioned that. And I also worry about the security and privacy of the residents and visitors who would be using this. So thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Irene. Mr. Chair, I see no other members of the public wishing to comment.
All right, Michael, did you have a rebuttal?
Yes, sir. So if this approval should be challenged, you know, you all should bear in mind that you have a strong foundation here. The correct law was applied in analyzing our application. That's the certificate of appropriateness criteria. So that was applied by staff. Procedural due process was accorded to all parties today. You even gave Mr. Lorente additional time to set forth his objections. There is ample substantial competent evidence in the record to support the approval. This comes in the form of the staff recommendation, testimony from staff, testimony from Bill Lane. Mr. Lorente and his client have no standing to be here today. They fall outside the definition of affected person, which is one of the few individuals that can appeal a decision of yours to the city's special master. They do not meet the definition of affected person, so we object based upon a lack of standing. Ms. Lorente's legal arguments have been rejected by the city attorney's office for over 2 years now. They see our client as an economic competitor, and they don't want us around. Everything else that is mentioned is just window dressing, pretext, a disguise for their true motivation. Their true motivation is a fear of a loss of advertising revenue. With regard to the homeless, this being magnets for homeless, please bear in mind that in New York City, they have actual outlets on their kiosk up there. We do not have outlets on our kiosk. And finally, bear in mind that after much effort, the Ocean Drive Association reversed its earlier position and now are in support of the proposed kiosk at Ocean Drive and 10th Street next to MDPL headquarters. We very much appreciate your time. I don't know if, Anna, you want to have any remarks. Are you good? Want anything to say? Sure.
One clarifying point from the public comment. If the cameras are a feature that cause concern, that is something that is modular and can be eliminated from kiosk locations. And I do want to mention that there's no surveillance technology on those. Those can only be accessed by the local police in the event of an emergency incident.
That's it, Mr. Chairman. We're available for your questions.
Great. Well, I think now, unless anybody has questions for the applicant, we move to a board comment. And
I just have one more question.
Yes, go for it.
I have one more question. Have you done any foot traffic studies in the areas? You had chosen the area around Farina, yet the group is opposing it. What studies have you done?
We did do foot traffic studies. We use a couple of third-party analytic systems to gauge traffic in an area. So that was one of the factors that was considered, along with the technical constraints of sidewalk width, distancing requirements from the bus shelters, and support from the neighborhood organization. So it wasn't the main factor, but it was, you know, a culmination of all of those things. And then also ensuring that there's commercial activity in the area, hotels, businesses that these kiosks would service.
Has the city staff reviewed these studies?
The city staff has reviewed the locations. We haven't been asked to provide information about that. What we have been asked to provide is information about distance from the adjacent bus shelters and bus stops to ensure those are in compliance. So that has been reviewed. But that is the extent. And then also just, you know, understanding the support that we have for the locations that we've proposed.
Is there a limit on the number of kiosks you intend to introduce into the city?
There is. So right now we are only able to introduce 15 to the city. And then there is a cap of 30, but to go from 15 to 30, that would require a city commission approval. So as of right now, 15.
Okay, thank you.
And are 9 of those 15 then in historic districts?
Correct.
Correct.
Got it.
I have a question. Mr. Kasdan brought up that his clients were opposed to the kiosk in front of, I believe it's the Faena Forum. I wanted to know, this is a question really for Mr. Kasdan. Is your client opposed to that exact location or in the district at all? And by the district, I mean the Faena district, just so we're clear.
Thank you, Lindsay. My client is opposed. The location actually is in front of the bazaar, not the forum. But nevertheless, my client is opposed to having any one of the kiosks located within the Faena district, yes. Because they've made a huge investment in, as you know, I think, in the streetscape, the landscaping, the street furniture, the street art, the buildings themselves. It's very carefully curated by Alan Faena, and of course, with the Amman coming in and the enormous investment they have, they do not want to see one of those within the district. Thank you.
Mr. Kasdan, I have a question, please. Why do they oppose it?
Because aesthetically it does not fit within the district. As I mentioned, that Mr. Meyer, there was the special streetscape approved by the city, funded by Faena, the Faena district, maintained by Faena, and they just don't feel it's appropriate. I also think that it is across the street from the Faena House, which is now its own, controlled by the Board of the Condominium Association, has already also expressed their opposition. And, of course, the Amman Residences will be across the street. I think they also don't want to have something lit up late into the night in front of their residences. Thank you.
If there, Elizabeth?
Yes. I have just two quick questions. One is, what's the source of power of those kiosks?
So we connect to underground power, which would be serviced through FPNL, the public utility.
And my next one is, you mentioned that in the, I think it was Coral Gables, that you have like 300 uses a month. And so is that your ideal number of uses? I mean, would you be, when you propose that to a city, what kind of numbers and uses were you looking for?
Yeah, 300 uses per kiosk per month is the average in South Florida. So it's not, our best location gets 300 uses per month. That's an average across, between Miami and Coral Gables, nearly 100 kiosks. And if you compare that to other public amenities in the right of way, like bike share that are used one time per month, it is something that, we find to be impactful. There's also aspects of usage that aren't tapping the kiosk, connecting to the free Wi-Fi. If you're, a visitor that's international that doesn't have a data plan, that's walking around, or the emergency functionality, or, the display of public art in the public sphere, a very highly democratic way to share artwork with the community. So there are aspects and public benefits beyond just tapping the screen, although we do think our usage analytics compared to other amenities in the public right-of-way are significant.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to go ahead, Debbie.
Yeah, if I could just follow up on Elizabeth's question. So the power is coming from underground, and I know we're working with our Public Works Department and all the various departments. Do you require a separate meter structure?
There are two. We prefer not to install a meter at the locations. If we're able to connect to either private power sources or municipal power sources like decorative street lighting handholds or holiday lighting, then we're able to meter internal to the kiosk. If we are going through FPL, then that would require a meter pedestal being placed, but we would work with you know, the planning department or whoever it would be appropriate to work with in the city to place those in inconspicuous areas.
And Mr. Chairman, yeah, Mr. Kasdan had a concern about the kiosk being too bright at night, and I just think you should address that.
So the increase to ambient light from a kiosk is less than that of a street light. So any street that has street lights, there would be no ambient light increase in that area. We also would get an FDEP permit on Ocean Drive because of the proximity to the ocean. So that would be something that we would be required for us to move forward. And also, we can dim these even more than what you're seeing in the city of Miami, if that's the preference of the city. There, it can be done through the ambient light sensor or remotely. And so in certain areas, so for example, in San Antonio, where we have locations near public parks, we dim them much more than what our ambient light sensor would do in those areas, because there's increased sensitivity to the ambient light in that area. But in the areas that we've selected in commercial parts of town, the ambient light increase won't be any additional ambient light created by the kiosk compared to the street lights and things that are already in the Great. Public sphere.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Before we get to board member comment, which might be, take a little bit, we're going to take a 5-minute break and be right back. Okay.
Thank you.
One.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for being back. We are now starting the section of the meeting of board member comment. And I thought, before we get to it, because we've had a lot to think about, maybe Debbie can help us to think about how we might assess this.
Sure. So what's before you today is the certificate of appropriateness for the design and placement of these structures. I think it's appropriate for the board to be looking at the general design of the kiosks themselves, also the colors, the shape, the new shape that was presented, and offer comments on those. Those can also be conditioned. You know, one thing that is brought up are the different colors. I think that's a very interesting topic, but we would like some direction from the board on that. There are 9 different locations. If the board is concerned about one particular location or another, I think that's within your purview. But we would need, we heard a lot of testimony today from several residents and business owners, and I think it would be helpful to stick with the certificate of appropriateness criteria in terms of the placement of the structures within the context and not rely solely on the testimony of the neighbors that, think that they're redundant technology and those types of issues, because that's not really part of your criteria. So I would refer you back to the review criteria, which do deal with scale, massing, placement, color, and that type of thing. So that's all I have. But I, during your discussion, if any questions come up, feel free to reach out. Also, I did want to point out there was some testimony today regarding the Miami-Dade County Code. That I think, and I've discussed this with Nick Kalergis, would be a good idea to just reiterate in the order, if the board wants to approve these today, that all of these devices will also need to comply with the Miami-Dade County Code of Ordinances, just to make it very crystal clear that we're not trying to supersede any other regulatory agency here.
Okay. With that, we'll start down the line. Ray?
Okay. To go further along with what Debbie said, there were many people that spoke today against the kiosks altogether. That is not our job. It was approved by the commission. Our job is simply to look at design and location. And I want to make that clear to all the people that spoke to us that that's not in our purview to whether we're going to have the kiosks or not. I like the design. I realize you can't make something so fabulously Miami Beach. A lot of us probably really would like to have that. I think you were very smart to eliminate square corners, because square corners get damaged. Round corners don't, as a general rule. You don't have the electric. and sticking with the pastel colors, I think, is really great. And as far as the locations go, you know, I mean, it's always going to be not in my backyard. I mean, people, oh, that's a great idea, but I don't want one here. So, you know, we have to really honestly look at that situation and see, you know, what we think. But as, again, in the future, I think you really have to take a serious look at the beach walk. That's a lot of people. Just go out there and see how many people walk that every single day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Laura?
Thank you again so much for the presentation. And I did appreciate, you know, all the commentary from the community. I think it is very important. You know, I do think some of the locations, to me, it seems like there is, although I was here in December, and I do appreciate all the outreach that you guys have done in a relatively short span of time with holidays, et cetera. I do think some of these locations, it doesn't seem truly, you know, defined to me. I also tend to agree that in a historic district, although you are, you know, outreaching to local organizations, art institutions, nonprofits, I personally don't really see the actual benefit of these. So my main concern is really the amount and the locations within historic districts. I do agree that perhaps looking at outside of historic districts a little more deeply and maybe relocating some of these 9 that you have proposed today would be very helpful, as well as, again, where, as Ray mentioned, more pedestrians walk, such as the boardwalk, which is, I believe, outside of the historic districts, is something that would be very helpful, at least in my decision-making. But thank you again. I think the design is wonderful. I just prefer the locations outside of historic districts in general.
Thank you. Elizabeth?
Well, thank you for the presentation. Going back to the beginning of it, for us that had recently joined the board, and thank you, Bill Lane, for your input on the design. It did add a little bit of personality to the kiosks. So I'm siding a little bit with Lauren regarding the location. And as I was looking at this package here that has the photos of all the kiosks, I feel like in some of them the sidewalks are already relatively tight, especially on Collins and south portion, like below the 20s. The sidewalks are already narrow. They are crowded. They have, some of them have trees in the middle, so I think it blocks even more the flow of pedestrians, especially like on weekends when you have a lot of people walking on the streets. And I did a tour on the South Beach recently, and I realized how many people are actually walking there, and it gets complicated because you have the skaters, the bikers, and all the people crossing the streets. So I would appreciate if you could revisit the locations of those kiosks and try to identify areas where maybe pedestrians would benefit more than in some of the areas, and especially given the limitation of space available, try to find areas where you won't be conflicting with pedestrian traffic as much.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. Haskell?
Yeah, first of all, thank you, Debbie, for clarifying what our vote is about, that is location, design, and color. And I think you've done a really nice job, Mr. Lane. I will say that the slide that you have shown is a little out of scale. They're slightly larger than what you show a man standing next to it. They're 8 foot, almost 8.5 feet tall. So just to put that into context, and the reason I say that, I'm really not in favor of having electronic billboards throughout the city. However, in light of what we are voting on in terms of design, I think the only thing that I would be opposed to is pushing it on areas that are not supporting them, in particular like the Faena area of Miami Beach, the district. So I would not be in favor of placing one there. The locations, to me, seem a little too close. You have one on 5th Street, just west of Collins Avenue. Then you have one on 6th Street, just north of Collins and 5th Street. So that's why I was asking about the foot traffic and why we have them in such close proximity. It does benefit the business owners, but, you know, the prevailing sentiment among the, you know, citizens of the city is that they don't want it. Having said that, the design is fine with me. I don't see any issues. Color is a personal taste. The colors are fine. Just the location is what we have to address. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you guys for the presentation. I echo, you know, a few of my board members' comments and then maybe kind of try to outline a strategy path perhaps to move forward. Look, I mean, we have to be a fierce defender of this city's brand. It is something that is so unique. It is creative. There's tons of innovation here. And we all know what the brand is, but sometimes it's difficult to convey or even give direction to the client before us in terms of exactly what it is. But sometimes when you know, you know. And so on the design piece, what I would say here is that I don't see it. So to me, I appreciate the fact that you guys came back, that there's progress here, that there is a recognition that what you originally proposed has to have the local character, has to be in the right context and the right scale and all of those things. But I still don't, when you know it and you see it, what it is that you feel like is Miami Beach, to me, it's not these renditions. Now, the closest I can get, and that is the, I guess, what you guys call option D, which is, you know, the shape that you landed on, I guess, with these 4-inch limitations that Mr. Lane feels that he has to meet that. And with the color palettes that were introduced, I believe that was yesterday or today. That doesn't mean that I'm in support, by the way, of all those color palettes. But in seeing that vibrancy of those colors, I at least feel that you're getting a little bit about what this city is about. And so I want to kind of think a little more clearly, historically speaking, in terms of its development, in terms of other, you know, public structures and design, motifs, and kind of challenge you guys to go back to the drawing board a little bit, or, you know, to improve what you're presenting us today. In fact, I think it would have been really helpful if Mr. Lane had shared with us his original, you know, studies that maybe he sent to you guys before you said that these weren't going to work. Just so that we have a better understanding as to kind of the origin and the evolution of how those things develop. I do agree with all of that said with most of the board members in the sense that I was not elected to a political office here, and I completely understand that, you know, we're here to do the very best for the city, and it was determined that this is a contract which is, which is for a 30-year term and with a revenue share with the city. And that's fantastic that we're looking at it, as the city as a partner. And I think that overall, those kinds of public-private partnerships, if you want to call them that, where we're taking, some revenue, I think that's fantastic. On the question of locations, because I know that's another issue that I think all of us have different, you know, kind of thoughts on. I would say, I'm going to echo what I guess it was what Laura said about, you know, getting the buy-in of some of the organizations. But I'll give you an example of one where I don't think you did, because I spoke with earlier today with the director of the Bass Museum of Art. And so, you know, her belief is that the siting of the kiosk at the mid-block between 22 and 23 is very close to Collins Park. They are now engaged in a wayfinding a new wayfinding design retrofit of all of the signs that are in that Collins Park Neighborhood Association. I know our fellow board member Ray is on the board, and I know he has also been participating here. But I, in full transparency,
and your BAS representative was in favor of it, just so you know.
Okay. So, and in full transparency, I am on the board of the BAS Museum of Art, but I think that you perhaps need to revisit that because of a conversation I had earlier today with the director. And so that's just one example here, and I would suggest that we also really dig into the details. To me, this isn't like another application where we can just say, okay, well, you know, we approve of the certificate of appropriateness and we can move forward here. Well, there's 9 different locations. There's hundreds of different stakeholders here. So there's a lot of work that we need to do, and I'm not saying that we have to bifurcate every street corner, every area, but we really want the best outcome for everybody, and I think we can get there. I'm really hopeful that we can, and that we can collaborate, you know, work in a collaborative way.
Okay, thank you. Lindsay?
Okay, so I think we've received a lot of good feedback here. First of all, I want to thank you guys for coming before us today and a couple months ago as well. So as they talked about, I'll start just what was most recently brought up. I know one of the comments or questions earlier was about the nonprofits that you involve. And it's funny that Bass Museum was just mentioned because I was thinking, you know, that you said you're going to reach out to the city of Miami Beach. I think that could be a little more fully fleshed out if in front of us. The ones that came to top of my mind were Miami City Ballet, Miami New Drama, Bass Museum, New World Symphony. I mean, we do have such a plethora of arts and culture institutions here in the city, and really kind of understanding how that is. I think that's a big selling point specific to Miami Beach and not just a generic, we promote arts and culture. So I'm going to start with location, design, color. I'm going to start with color. So my opinion on the color, I like the design that you brought back before us today as far as the color scheme goes, as opposed to the black one that's available in downtown Miami, for example, and what was originally proposed. Probably contrary to my fellow board members, the way that I am picturing it is rather than utilizing the color on the outside rim of the things that behind the glass, is that's part of what the screen is for, right? So that color doesn't become, not to say that it would become outdated, right? But so the color doesn't become something that is no longer of the time, or, you know, if we put it in front of a building, for example, on, a historic building that has a certain color scheme right now, and then they come before for us and want to change that color scheme to something different, and we approve, then, you know, then what, we replace the sign, we change the sign. But if the sign, the structure, I wrote down the vessel, if the vessel itself is somewhat muted, then the vibrancy can be as part of, like, the screen that's what's presented. And that goes back to, like, the dynamic perspective of the digital media, if you will. So for me personally, not that I don't love the colors, I wasn't a big fan when they presented to me separately. So I go for the more muted color and let our architecture and our buildings in our historic district stand out, which then, okay, I'm going to come back to design, which then takes me to location. So I know one of my fellow board members brought up location. So I know there was a reconsideration between the last time you were here and this time because Ocean Drive Association, I believe, and or maybe the Betsy Hotel pushed back on that location right there where the promenade kind of comes out onto Ocean Drive. And I think that was very respectful of Ike to really take the feedback from the community. And so if we're getting that much pushback from other institutions or residents or something like that that are pushing back against a particular location for a valid reason where they feel like they're being impacted, then I think that's really something we need to take in consideration. As to locations within our historic district, so I was asking kind of offline over here, how many locations went before DRB? And I think it's 2 other locations. Is that correct? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's like Alton and Lincoln and
Convention Center,
right? So as we're going to discuss here in a minute, this is the map of our historic districts. And I would say arguably that, you know, this type of installation, which again was directed by the commission, makes the most sense in commercial corridors where you're having foot traffic and this and the other. And in Miami Beach, our commercial corridors, by and large, are in historic districts. And so while I appreciate the concern, it's kind of, you know, if they want it, that's kind of where it has to go. And so I think, you know, where is the best location within those historic districts, if you will, or those commercial corridors where they're to be located? And then more to the location. So I was looking specifically at, I'm just going to call them 7, 8, 9. So, and I think also 13 and 16 were brought up. I actually personally don't think they're too close together because I live in South Beach. I walk through a lot of this area quite regularly. And I could walk by one of these 1,000 times and not walk by the other one just because depending on where I'm going, which direction I'm going and what I'm headed towards, I don't think I would run into more than one, which is interesting. Even though they do seem close together on the map, I was trying to think like what path I would take. I mean, unless I'm just walking around the block, which is, I guess is possible. What else? Oh, finally, with respect to my colleague who's standing before us. So I asked this question of our representative from the city attorney's office. And so there was some discussion about who can appear before this board to speak. And it was referenced to the standard of who can appeal a decision of this board. And those are two different things. And so I just want to make sure that we clarify that for the purposes of anybody listening or watching. Should I just say it or do you want to do it?
No, sure. The code doesn't restrict who may appear during a public hearing before the Historic Preservation Board. So Lindsay's correct. There are separate rules for appeals from decisions of the Historic Preservation Board, but there's nothing prohibiting a member of the public from appearing during the public hearing.
So I just want to make sure that that point was clear as far as anyone appearing before us. Yeah, I think those are the sum of my comments.
All right. Well, thank you. I guess my comments are kind of a reflect, you know, they kind of reflect on where we are right now and why we're here. And I think if you remember all the work that we did with the antennas and where they were going to go. And these were not being addressed by anybody, but we looked at every single corner and we measured out like literally the feet. We could see, we had measured drawings that would say, okay, this is this far from the corner. This is this far from this hedge. This is this far. Can we move it? And I think there was a level of detail that we looked at each site that was kind of helped us as a group see that a person in a wheelchair could get by it, that it wasn't right in front of a, you know, an important architectural feature, and those like these, we didn't have an option as to whether to approve them. We know that they were already approved by the city commission, but we had a choice. We had a chance to think about other alternative locations and really specific placement because I think the enjoyment of our historic districts is really in walking through them, which is a very detailed experience. And so we're all kind of like referencing walking through these and by them, but we don't really know, you know, we're not sure exactly. I mean, we see on a rendering kind of where it looks like it might be, but we don't see a plan like that shows exact. And we haven't really talked about, okay, where's the front door? Because I kind of see the front door, but we've been making mistakes even with these. What building they're in front of. So I think this needs, I also think, well, I'll go back to the color and location, the color as well. And the design. I mean, I think at some point we have to rely on the skills and the talents of our architects who, Bill, who's been involved with this and just, for every one of us on the board and probably for every architect in the city, there's probably a different design that could be proposed. But I think that we are kind of I think it's important to trust your judgment. You've had a lot of experience with designing brand specific on brand kind of buildings and life. I was trying to think of what a lifeguard station would. I think it's a building, lifeguard stance. And I think that we kind of need to look at that and kind of take that. We can also kind of guide staff in terms of where a specific color might be more appropriate or where no color would be more appropriate. Maybe in most cases, no color is appropriate. But and then that kind of takes care of, from my perspective, the design and the. But each one of these is like they're hugely complex. I mean, there are obviously an infinite number of colors that could be chosen, and there are an infinite number of designs that could be chosen, and there are an infinite number of locations. So I would recommend that we focus on locations, and I'm inclined to take the Faena District one out. And I'm also inclined, because we had very strong opposition to these in Faena District, and we had very strong support on Lincoln Road and Washington Avenue from the bids. And I think we were talking about the commercial applications for these and the opportunity for people who are here, tourists shopping, maybe they're distracted by their shopping. They could actually catch a rehearsal at the Miami City Ballet or an exhibition at the Bass if they only knew it was this close, would be an opportunity for us to kind of capture people more in the commercial district so that they will then take advantage of the Jewish Museum of Florida, the Wolfsonian and others. So I'm inclined to think about this as to think about the group of eight and to try to kind of look at them more specifically. Now, I'm not sure whether that's something that the board would want to entertain looking at now, or whether you'd like that to come back with the specifics of the location, with the specifics of the, the buildings that are around that location. Exactly, what is the building right in front of it? The floor plan of the street and the sidewalk, and the kind of support of the person who the building owner that's or the tenant in the if it's a store that's right in front of it. Just to be able to give this. To give people confidence that when the kiosk goes in one location, that we've understood that location as opposed to kind of not. Yes.
I have a comment / question. I know it was mentioned in the presentation that the applicant went before TPP, PFC, Transportation, Parking, Bicycle, Pedestrian Facilities Committee. I don't know that we necessarily got information as to if there was a response. Did they send any sort of letter directed to us? I know it was just yesterday. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Did we hear from that committee? TPB, PFC. That was one of the things I requested last time the applicant was before us. And they said they went before them.
And I have no reason not to believe that, but I don't think anything was given to staff.
Okay.
So I don't have any knowledge of transmission.
Okay.
Would that impact or just to be another layer
I really,
to the
I was wondering, I mean, the reason I had requested them to go before them is to make sure that the pedestrian impact was analyzed by those who are supposed to be looking at this issue. Mm-hmm. And to hopefully come back to us with a favorable or an unfavorable recommendation, which I think speaks to some of the things that my colleague brought up regarding, you called it the floor plan, but, what the sidewalks look like. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Ray?
Question, when you start these, you're actually going to obviously build one first and then a second one, a third one. Do they all come online at the same time, or as soon as one is up, it's running and can be interacted with?
As soon as one is up and running, it can be interacted with. So we would do it in if the board, approved several locations today, but not all nine, we would begin on those locations and those would go live before the ones that are not approved.
because it seems to me like there's a great response for the one on Ocean Drive and 10th. Yeah. It seems to me like that would be the one we should do first. Everybody can go down and play with it and say, hey, this is a great idea. Just a thought.
I have a question for staff regarding the position of the current commission on this issue, because I didn't pick it up earlier that this is a 30-year term. Technology changes quite a bit. It's changing at a very rapid pace. Are these things going to be obsolete in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? What is the current position of the commission on this issue?
I don't know if that is specifically addressed by the commission, but I mean, you're accurate, right? Everything from our televisions to our watches to our cars in, you know, 5 years, I have a car that's a little bit almost 6 years old. It's antiquated. It doesn't have half of the features that everyone else has. And I like to keep my cars for a long time, but it gets challenging. So I don't know if there's modifications that can be made to the existing equipment to upgrade them. But it is something that's interesting to think about. The good thing about these is they are relatively easily removable without destroying any historic buildings or any historic features, right? Staff did look at all of the locations, and you know, installing them and removing them is not going to destroy anything in the city that is, you know, irreplaceable. So that's good news, because you're right, technology is temporary. And I don't know what the contract is. I think it's after the 15 years, the commission, you know, if we want to put more of these in, would have the say on that. Whether or not in 15 years these are necessary anymore would be something that the city commission would look at. Right now, there's a maximum of 15. Is it 15 years that the city commission would see if we want to install more, up to the maximum of 30 that is within the contract? But I don't believe we would have to. The city commission would have to agree to install more of these.
To clarify that point, our agreement is not 30 years. It's 20, and it's divided between an initial term and a renewal term. And in order to get the renewal term, we have to upgrade hardware, software. All of the technology has to be refreshed, like new condition, throughout the entire term of the agreement. So it's not 30. It is 20, just to clarify. Okay. And there are thresholds to renewal to make sure that the technology does not get outdated.
With all due respect, I just don't see a tremendous benefit other than perhaps, I mean, it's not a tremendous benefit. I mean, we're talking about 15 kiosks at approximately $20,000 per kiosk a year. That's $300,000, and the city coffers not a significant value when everybody nowadays is walking around with a smartphone that they can do whatever, get whatever information readily available. If I want to pull up a tour right now, I can do that on my phone. So. For me, again, it comes back to the issue of what we're here for, and that is design, location, and color palette. And I think that's what we'll vote on. That's all we can do.
I am in agreement with you on all those fronts. I'm not in supportive of these. I wasn't supportive of the infrastructure, the other infrastructure, the antennas that are all over the city now. But this is not. We are not. The commission, we're not voting on whether these happen or not. They have been voted in, and there's already been a discussion, and the commission has reaffirmed that. I believe they've reaffirmed that position, that's not negotiable. So our best bet, I think, and is to, as you say, make sure that we, with the three factors, location, color, and design. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Just curiosity, the shape of the kiosk, is it dictated by the equipment that goes inside, or it's bigger just because it needs to be visible and it needs to be a certain height for visibility or whatsoever?
It's a mixture of things. So the bottom 18 inches of the cabinet are completely empty because it's flood resistant, and especially in South Florida, that's immensely important. And so the bottom 18 inches is completely empty. We use an ambient air cooling system to keep the kiosk cool, the internal components. There's no air conditioner inside of it, which makes them quiet. If you see the ones in Miami, you cannot hear them. That requires a significant amount of airflow coming in from the bottom vent to the top vent to operate. And then, you know, there is a significant revenue share with the city. $1.5 million is what we project a year. We've already delivered $1 million. The screen does have to be visible. And so to accommodate, you know, the 65-inch on a diagonal screen, that is another factor to consider in this. But we have made efforts to ensure that they are as thin and as, you know, small as possible in order to not create too much, to take up too much space in the public right-of-way.
I hear that there, I mean, we could, for example, as a board, approve those that were, if we feel we're confident with any of them, in terms of their location, design, and color, we could approve a series of them and then ask for more information on others. I think we'd have to do this consecutively, but, you know, the thought of I don't even know if this is possible. If it worked that we decided that a few of them we could approve today, with others coming up later, you know, with more consideration, if that's possible. I don't know. I don't. Anyway. You have any comment?
Yeah, I think that is possible. The board, in their discretion, could. I mean, they did. You know, submit the map with number coded locations. So if there are some on the map that the board feels satisfy the certificate of appropriateness criteria, those could be approved, and then we could, in a sense, bifurcate the application and have the applicant go back and look at, you know, the locations that the board has concerns with and then come back.
We don't have to approve them one by one, right? It would be a group approval.
It could be a group approval. Okay. And, you know, if the board, I think it would be helpful if there are certain locations the board does not feel satisfy the appropriateness criteria, that those could also be denied.
And I almost think further to Lindsay's point earlier, where we're talking about the commercial districts, perhaps it would be best to really start with kind of the ones where we feel are the least offensive. Sorry to use that word for you guys. I know you guys have done a great job. But just, you know, knowing the character of those neighborhoods, we could maybe start with those. You know, with that said, I will not approve the one on 23rd and Collins until you have consulted with the director of the Bass Museum and she has opined on that.
So, but Brian, just so you know, I don't think that Sylvia told you that I did reach out and have a discussion with her. And she asked me if we could wait till the wayfinding signage program was completed.
Sure.
And I didn't know the status of it, but I know the architects behind it at Perkins Will. So I reached out to them, and they said they hadn't even started it yet.
Yeah.
So
understood.
I feel that that's, you know, and I did reach out to her. Did she not?
I had a conversation with her this morning. So
right.
Just to update you a little bit. So I think that I don't want to speak for, you know, the management of the Bass Museum, but I think mm-hmm. that, you know, another meeting with her would likely perhaps get to where we need to go with that specific location. So I would ask that location be taken out
sure.
of the work that we're going to be doing right now.
let's see if maybe everybody feels as you do or maybe they don't, but I maybe what we should do is see if we can, if there are four people, that's what we need for the mm-hmm. certificate of appropriateness, four
right.
people who would, in a straw poll, approve of any of them. Because I'm not sure we're there yet.
Okay.
We could start to see if any, we could just go through the list. And if you feel you're comfortable with the location, the color, and the design, or maybe we could see if if anybody's comfortable, if we have four people comfortable with the design, because if we don't, then we need to have another design kind of consideration.
Right, that would be my suggestion. I think without approval of the design, there is no point in approving location.
Okay.
Yeah. I know we're saying location, color, and design as shorthand, but the board's review, full review criteria does apply, including compatibility, everything else that
absolutely.
You... Okay, just wondering.
Yes,
sure.
Absolutely. So are there... Okay, so we'll do a straw poll, if you don't mind, and we'll see whether you're comfortable voting on design today or whether you'd like to see... It would be we continue the design for further evaluation. So, Ray?
Yes.
Laura? Okay. Elizabeth? Okay. Haskell? Okay.
No.
Okay.
We
don't have it. Trip Gold's down. Okay, so I think what we need to do is we can give you some guidance in mm-hmm. terms of we need to continue this item. And in terms of guidance, we can maybe each offer guidance. Brian offered his guidance. Lindsay, anybody else who wants to offer guidance, I offered the suggestion that we take the fine as a district out of this.
We don't object to that. That's fine.
Are we talking about design?
No, we're talking about continuing this whole item so that it will come back, and we may be able to shape the way it comes back, and shape the kind of, now that everybody will have seen it once, because some people were just seeing it for the first time, we might be able to really just go through each one in each location individually and kind of talk about why it was chosen, the data-driven kind of reasons that it was that location was, whether it's distance from a bus stop or whether it's traffic. Yes.
Well, John, to your point, though, I think it would be really helpful if we actually spell out those criteria that we would like to see when this item comes back for the continuance. Good. And so perhaps we can all throw in those things. What I would like to see, to your point, is that there's some sort of a floor plan that shows the length of the block from, whether it's the 23rd to the 24th, showing all the interjecting trees, other structures, like you said, the location to the facade of the building. And then from other data that we would like to see is support from any local community arts organization, non-for-profit that is receiving money from the city of Miami Beach, who is also furthering the cultural goals of the city. I think we need to understand very clearly where they stand on those kiosks in each area. Firstly, that's what I would like.
Go ahead. Yes.
If I could just ask for a clarification. So they submitted what's really kind of an engineering plan.
Yes, they're illegible, I think.
Right. So just to follow up on Brian's recommendation, you're asking for them to go use these as the base and then add more architectural information, like where the adjacent buildings are located, to the greatest extent that they're able to do that. Mm-hmm. A little bit more of an architectural site plan instead of an engineering site plan.
Yes,
correct.
Yes.
And then, for example, let's just take the one at 10th and Ocean. Mm-hmm. We know that the very institution that is on the corner of 10th and Ocean is in full support. That was very clear to me from the application. And we know that they have opined on, in fact, I believe the color that they want on that specific location. So I think it's really important that you drill down on each and every one of these to make sure that we have, the support from the neighborhood or from the building owners or other stakeholders in the community, and that it's clear for us. Because to me, it's not really clear that, and I'm going to bring up the Bass one again, it's not clear to me on the Bass one when I talked to the director this morning that she knew that she could program the artwork, as Lindsay was saying before, and, make sure that was a constant feed. Now, maybe there was a miscommunication, but I just...
I don't mind reaching out to her again. That's fine. We'll do that.
Can I just ask that the board maybe provide some direction for the design investigation? Because I think we will end up seeing each one of the kiosks in its new set in a setting in each one of the however many settings you guys land on, and that we would probably like to see, I think, how the design was modified, how you came up with it, maybe some inspiration for the design in historic architectural detail. I think you kind of hinted at that, Bill, but even a slide that kind of pointed to something and said, this is what we're looking at, and this is how this is responding. The kiosk design is responding to this historic building. Yes. Anybody else have other recommendations for what you'd like to see if you're seeing a design, a presentation of an evolution of this design?
For me, the drawings that you've submitted so far are sufficiently detailed as to the location and so forth. So in terms of locating it, is to me is the most important thing, where we place these. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really serves a purpose for the local community. This is really tourist-driven, and I think we have to limit ourselves to the commercial corridors where most of the concentration of the tourists are, so that they can have that experience to navigate throughout the city. But at this point in time, for me, I think we have to come, if you're coming back to the board, I think we have to have a detailed study as to why you're choosing these particular locations. It seems to me a bit random from our discussion today, and I think we have to be a little more focused on that. In terms of the design, I just have a question. Is it the same size as the ones that are in the city of Miami currently?
So it is the same height and the same width. The only thing is that there are 4-inch extensions on each side, so it is a little bit wider, but the depth and the height are the same.
Okay.
Anybody else have any direction they'd like to give?
Well, just that, you know, library. We've talked about, you know, something on the beach walk. We've also talked at something at exits to garages. And it seems to me like when you put in a sign, you're going to turn around and check your foot count or who's actually using them. And I would think that if you would pick one location on the beach walk in one location by one of the garages, that's quickly going to tell you whether that was the right place to put them or not. Right now, you're putting them all on streets, and I know it's because you want the cars to be looking at the ads as they drive by, but then the people are going to collect there. It seems to me like if you go to a place where it's only pedestrians, like the beach walk, or when people are coming out of a garage, they say, okay, where am I going from here? Bingo, there's a sign to tell them. And I think you really should do that.
Elizabeth, were you going to say something?
Yes. So I understand the limitations of adding a more like creative design to the rectangular shape of the kiosk, given the way it's built. And I think Bill did a nice job adding those add-ons, but they're very limited on what they can do and the shapes they can have. And so I like the idea of having like the wave kind of trying to the cuts, but I wish they could be more not clearly expressed, but more emphatically expressed. Given, I know that within 4 inches here and 4 inches there, there isn't much you can do, and I don't know how much flexibility, added flexibility you can get from the manufacturer of the kiosk, but if you could give him a little bit more flexibility in pushing the shapes, I think we could get a much more creative and interesting design.
Yeah, I mean, actually echoing Elizabeth's point, too, and that was a piece that I mentioned to you yesterday, Bill, is I felt when I was going to open up that sheet to see your study, I thought there was going to be an undular, sculptural-looking, wave-like thing. I don't want to, you know, I'm not a designer, so I can't, you know, design from the podium here, but to me, I didn't see anything that kind of did that, and Elizabeth has such a great point that, and that's kind of why I keep asking about the 4-inch restriction, which I know maybe it's like, you know, from cost point of view and whatnot, but I don't want creativity to be, risked here in, you know, trying to, you know, make everything so cost efficiently. I'm curious if there could be more done there.
Right. You know, one of the limitations was actually the impact these would have on the streetscape. So, yeah, I could, you know, I could do something very elaborate. I've done it on the beach, but I was concerned about this thing getting too big because we were out there. We did that. And it just became such an object and such a look at me. So, you know, when you look at the Deco or Streamline or Mediterranean, they're responding to itself. So, in a way, I was responding to this information kiosk. So that was my context in terms of...
But to me, the information kiosk has zero historical value.
No, I'm talking more about the generic kiosk that you find in other cities. Most of the, aside from Ike's brand, there's a similarity in these information kiosks. And we had done one for another company way back when. And we had looked at, for instance, the PBS were looking at the iconic telephone booth in London. We were looking at Snoopy. We were looking at branding and how to integrate that into something that would be a brand, that would be iconic to the city. But that particular design was a little surreal. And, you know, that could be a thing. But it didn't seem to be appropriate. It seemed like it would just become, I would say, a one-liner, and it would wear out. And not that I'm not opposed to exploring and sharing with you other silhouette options, but the thing was, do we want this thing to be a wow, which I can do, but we have the dune as a demarcation, a very specific demarcation with that other project. But here we have to consider the noise, I call it noise, of the urban fabric. So how far do you take it before it becomes, like, too much? So it's always that give and take. But, you know, certainly it's, you know, I have the vocabulary I can use to do the kind of things that you're suggesting. It's just when we did do it, those are all the considerations that the studio went through. And so it came down, for me at least, the strategy was to give movement, like just a visual movement. You know, this is, you can find this in any period of architecture. You know, architecture is often about movement. And so the movement was in some ways dictated by how much do you want this element to be on your street, either there, here, anywhere. What would be something that would be universal? And in some ways, Ike's design or other companies' designs tend to be very uniform, almost non-architectural, in order to not even be there, so to speak. So, you know, you see that in bus shelters. There's a certain kind of restraint. And that was the kind of the balance act that I saw here. And again, yeah, we could do a wave that comes out 12 inches easily. But is that something you want when everyone's talking about...
Well, there are other attributes here, right? There's materiality, for example. And so, you know, when we went over the presentation yesterday, it was, okay, well, this is going to be powder-coated the way a car is powder-coated.
Right.
To me, that doesn't really... That is not that interesting. So, and I'm not an architect, so I don't know, you know, all the different products that you guys can use, but I assume there are a lot of different products,
right,
a lot of different materials and textures and ways to express something with material and with color, and I felt like it wasn't done. Now, I hear what you're saying. You're essentially arguing the view that we want them to disappear on the street.
Somewhat.
I think.
Yeah, I think they should be unique to the beach.
I think they should be in the background. But I think that when you see them out of the corner of your eye, you know that they're Miami Beach, and I'm not confident yet.
Right. I think one of the things that Debbie had pointed out would be perhaps the graphics would respond if there was a kiosk that had color. That it wouldn't be blue against pink. It might be within that pink. There's tones of pink that somehow could come in and just further it as an element. I think the graphics itself, that was the issue we had with color, was, you know, how do we work with a blue to a yellow, or the blue to a blue? Well, that would work, but a blue to a pink. Those kind of things became factors, and, you know, Debbie kind of alluded to that, too, which I thought was interesting, and we felt, too. And actually, after our meeting yesterday, you know, there were things that you brought up that, if you notice in our slide, kind of, you know, I picked up on some of the things that you were speaking about, and, you know, some of the other things Mr. Breslin put forth, this idea of just, it's too much, it's too many things going, too much competition. But the form itself, the silhouette, was a difficult one. Like, how much is it there versus how much do we, I mean, honestly, you know, I could do those kind of things, I could do this, and I've done it before, but is that appropriate? You know, that was the kind of context of the design. It was difficult. We certainly would love this to brand, but do you want this to be emblematic of your brand, or would you rather the architecture out there be your brand, and, you know, let's say even the Lifeguard Towers, do you want this to constantly be there as your brand, like, oh, there's your brand again, or do you want that branding to be a little bit more toned down, turned down, so it's there, but it's not glaring, where it might get maybe a little tired over time. So it's that give and take. And I think John kind of mentioned that too, that, yeah, it's like design isn't that easy. And when you do come up with, there's many, many factors you're working with in the process. And those are all part of that process, the things that, you know, I've been describing. You know, I don't think, you know, one person, we don't want sharp edges. Yeah, of course, we want something soft. The wave, the issue we had, the wave, when we wanted it to really be a wave, we had to go beyond the 4 inches. It just didn't work as like a little scribble. And, you know, when we did that, it wasn't necessarily Ike. It was more, how big do you want this thing to be? And we're kind of limited width-wise, you know? I figured, okay, we can take 4 and 4, we'll add 8 inches. But when you go beyond that, you're 12, 18, it just becomes too big. And, you know, we try to work with some of their components, like the angles. But when we did the angles, we felt, well, what would be compatible with those angles? And kind of the form we came up with felt the best. And we did go through a lot of permutations of, let's see what we can do with their prototype. And affect it. Again, it was very figurative. You know, I like anthropomorphic things. I saw it like hip, you know, like just a little movement, a little dance going on in there. But that's sort of where we kind of took it. So we could go back and play with more shapes, but I'm just afraid that we're always going to come back to that same, you know, like, how do you satisfy time, a context? Do we want it to be loud in terms of either form or color? Do we want it to be there but not there? So that was my take, there but not there.
I was just going to add, because I thought that was a great direction to go in. And if it sounds like the board is interested in seeing just one more iteration, mm-hmm. of a design, and if it could maybe relate, and you talked about it relating to a hip or something like this, but maybe if it relates in a very subtle way to a very specific historic architectural detail, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be that detailed. But I felt like the way you were navigating this, you had kind of pulled back from any reference. And maybe if there was some kind of reference that you could point to that was inspirational, that came from something local that's not changing, that's not right. The changing, because the brand will change, like you're right. This shouldn't be the, you know, trying to do that. But if this somehow has a sense of place that's about something, mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the building that's in front of it, but it's something that catches your eye because you are a very astute and long-term observer of of architecture on Miami Beach. So it's very appropriate that you're doing this. And maybe we can kind of draw on that skill of yours to connect the that dot.
You know, on that point, I don't see this. I mean, I could allude to. I don't, because of the scale, I almost see it more as a body, a person, a thing. So it almost goes beyond like maybe making references to a particular style of architecture. So that was another thing.
I mean,
thing.
At one point I thought, is he, when I opened it and my eyes looked at it for a second, I thought, is this the city of Miami Beach, the actual island itself?
Right.
And so, and perhaps that's too literal. You know, I'm not the artist here, but that says something to your mind on the street level that you say, this is the place that where I am right now, and this is the way the island looks like, you know, even if it was something super, super subtle. That's just an example, you know, if something, you throw it out. It's probably a bad example. But I think that's what I would like to see some more iterations of.
Right, right. I see it as a graphic element, you know. Yeah, and a lot of the, you know, what I was saying earlier, I love ornament, and I think it's something that's missing in architecture. Well, it's not. I mean, a lot of people are really bringing ornament back in their own way. But I see it as being, yeah, potentially I'll go back. Let me take another take at it, and I'll give you some of the process that we go through. Again, I assume everyone wants it to be somewhat compact. We don't want something bigger.
If I could, through the chair, if I could just ask a question. Do all of the Ike kiosks, everywhere that you've ever installed them, have the exact same screen size? Or is there any opportunity to maybe reduce the screen size or change the proportion to a small extent so that we can maybe get a little bit more elegance in the form? Which I think was where Brian was going.
To answer your question, yes, the screens are 65-inch on the diagonal, you know, in all of our installations. We try to make, you know, sometimes you go to cities and, you know, I know there's lots of references to New York and the kiosks in New York. Those are not our kiosks. But what you'll notice there is the cabinet is quite large, but the screen is actually smaller than our screen. And so we want the focus to be the content, right? Like all of the cool things that we have a full stack engineering software engineering team that's dedicated to building this software. That is supposed to be sort of the pinnacle of the program. And so the proportion of screen to cabinet and the visibility of that screen is an important element of this.
So there's no, you're saying there's a zero opportunity to make these slightly smaller so that the architecture.
No, I don't want to say, you know, I never want to say that there's no opportunity to do it. I think I'm more so just trying to explain the thought process behind it. But when we are looking at different.
I mean, it too. Miami Beach is not a high speed city. We don't have cars, you know, racing down. Well, hopefully. You know, so people are driving slow. People are generally walking relatively slow. I don't know, just maybe I'm just trying to pick up on some of the board members' comments. And I think if we could look at that, and I, again, I don't know what the limitations are with your technology, that may be helpful to your architect to get I think what they're looking for, and from what I've heard, they're not looking for an ultra design element that's going to jump out. Right. But I think you're probably looking for a bit more elegance in the shape of your form to be more commensurate with the elegance of the proportions in our historic architecture and the curves in our historic architecture.
And there may be ways also to reduce size without reducing screen. That's another option.
Okay. A question or a comment. Is there a possibility it would, without, like if reducing the screen size is a sticking point, is there a possibility from programming on the screen and then design of the encasement that some of the design can extend over the screen, if that makes any sense? So a piece of the powder-coated metal extends over the screen and then extends back out to basically give you more of a palette for the design without necessarily making you go back to the drawing board with everything as far as the hardware that you're using. Something like that. And then you could say, okay, well, if that design extends, I'm hypothetically, right, that design extends over the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, then we don't have programming in that bottom right-hand corner of the screen. We've lost that real estate for programming, but you could write that into the code of the application or operating system that sits behind this. That's my thought process.
That's a very interesting concept, and you know, I'm not the architect here, but it's something that
I'm not a designer nor an application writer, but something to that effect, just kind of a way to, as I'm thinking about the thoughts that are being suggested over here, and considering the fact that I get that you have kind of a somewhat standardized process, right, and there's cost efficiencies and this, that, and the other, I'm sure, associated with that. That also allows you to, you know, corporations or entities generally standardize across a platform for very good reasons, right? Because that means that everyone knows what's going on. And so if you start changing that, you go from 65 to, I don't know, 60, right, on the diagonal. I don't know if that means totally different hardware that then might have other considerations. So that was just a thought about how avoiding the change in hardware but allowing for some more design aspects.
That's super helpful. And I do want to just note one clarifying point, which is a big factor in all of this is maintenance, right? Like, we store components in Miami Beach so that if something is damaged, we have those in Miami Beach to replace them. We choose the powder-coated aluminum because it doesn't dent, it doesn't chip, it doesn't stain. And we have an obligation to keep these like new. And so if we start to introduce materials that are susceptible to being damaged by, you know, the wind or the rain or the salt in the air, like, that creates another layer of maintenance concern, and we want these need to be like new. And so those are just considerations that I think will be important. The way that these age will be important, I think, to the city. And so we're just being very careful to select materials that do withstand those elements.
And as you're looking at, you know, maybe changing the design, we have to consider vandalism. The city has done many projects before to make them look great and gorgeous, and within a very short period of time afterwards, they get vandalized and damaged. So your simplicity in design is really good for maintaining, as you've said. So that's something we have to keep in mind.
So do you feel like you have direction in terms of the what you'd be aiming for?
I understand, but Anna has one question.
I do have one clarifying question. So on the design, I feel like we have good direction. With the locations, you know, I heard feedback that there wants, you know, you want to hear clear support from the neighborhood group and the adjacent property owner, as well as the analytics and things of that nature. Are there any locations, just so that we don't eliminate locations that you guys would be supportive of? And there are quite a few in there that do have that kind of dual support of the neighborhood group and the adjacent property owner. Are there any locations that you feel like do hit the mark so that we are not reworking locations that you actually support and revisiting locations that, you know?
Lindsay?
Can we do that individually? Because, I mean, there may be differing viewpoints.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I think in my mind, I'm very clear whether or not I've expressed that to you guys. I am in support of essentially all the locations south of 2 and 3. I think 2 and 3 are where we've had the most pushback. 2, obviously, we had Neeson here earlier, and then 3 was represented by our board and someone, but it, you know, perhaps that can be revisited. But the other ones, and quite frankly, 3, I would probably support, you know, if we get the support from the adjacent property owners and cultural institutions. And I would also suggest, I believe it's just north of the Bass Museum, correct?
It's a half block.
Right.
I think if you go another half block, you'd be fine.
Well, I was also, I mean, but the, quite frankly, Bass Museum is not the only cultural institution right there. So Miami City Ballet is right there as well. So, I mean, I would definitely you know, seek their involvement.
Mike.
our board did vote on it, and Sabrina was in favor of it from the Bass Museum. She thought it was a fabulous idea. So, I mean, our board has all the cultural institutions on the board to speak on behalf of them, and it was unanimously approved.
Right. I'm just relaying to a conversation that I had with the director of the museum, who is an employee of the person that was involved. So let's just involve the director, and I'm sure we'll have good direction. That's it.
We are dealing with some responsiveness concerns, too. And so
you will get full responsiveness from her. I've been communicating with her.
Okay, great.
All right. I think that's probably the best we can do as a group, unless anybody has anything to add, and unless you have anything else you'd like to request in terms of direction. But I do think that a clear packet with the plan of the area that the location plan for the kiosk with a picture of the kiosk, so that we can kind of see, oh, that's actually 2 feet from the sidewalk and 8 mm-hmm. feet from the building, from the edge of the building. And you can kind of see that not in a public works way, but in a kind of architectural way. Yes. Oh, okay. Well, and then a photograph, maybe from both sides, from two sides. We saw that helped when the photographs were keyed into the plan, so we could see, oh, this is from the south side, and this is what it will look like from the north side. And then keying it into you know, a larger plan like this, so that we know where each one ended up being, but maybe a slightly more legible version of a location plan for that.
Sure.
And I think along, if it's possible to incorporate somehow on this location plan, I mean, I don't know where along these corridors there are the bus shelters that provide location limitations as far as the 250 feet separated from each other and separated from the... So providing that to kind of say, and perhaps like a radius says, mm-hmm. you know, we can't be in this circle, that might add some additional color. Because I think there were some people... I think they got lost in the... I think that got lost in the discussion up here is, well, why did you choose this? Why this? Why that? Why the other? I'm kind of trusting that, well, these were chosen for various reasons, including but not limited to the 250 feet distance requirement. But if we had that visually, perhaps that would help people understand why.
Absolutely.
And the historic building facade. So I realize when you look up and down the street, you don't see the building that's next to you. But maybe if we could get a view from across the street to see the thin profile of this in front of the building, so we can at least say, okay, well, it should line up with, you know, this element, or look, it looks like it was a mistake. Like, you know, we can kind of see those things. I think we'd like to get that level of detail so we can then support that. Elizabeth?
Quick question. What you see on both sides of the kiosk is exactly the same.
Yes, but they can be interacted with independently. So two people could be using the kiosk at the same time, but
right,
they are.
If they are a standstill position, they would be the same. So regarding the location of the kiosk and how to inform us what's happening, so in your photograph on Collins and 16th Street, for instance, the kiosk is aligned with the center line of the trees. So it's very clear how much circulation you have left on both sides. But if you look at the picture, let's say, on Collins and 23rd, it's kind of, there is a tree and there is a kiosk and there's a piece of sidewalk here.
Is your mic on?
I'm sorry?
Your mic is? Okay. I was having trouble hearing.
Okay.
Sorry,
I need to be very close to it. So in situations like that, it's important to show how much is left once you take the tree out of the picture, you take the space the kiosk is taking, what much is left.
Sure. So we really value all the input you all gave us today. It was voluminous. It was all helpful. It was instructive. I remember when McDonald's came to Alton Road and 16th, it took 3 times to get McDonald's to understand and appreciate the special character of Miami Beach. I think Ike has tried very hard, and we're going to try even harder, and we'll come back to you all hopefully in May. That's the continuance request that I'm making.
Okay. So do I have a Do I have a motion to continue?
Motion to continue.
Until May. What's the May? What's the
it's
date of the
May 14th.
May 14th.
I'll move to continue to May 14th.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And just for everyone's information, we will not be in this room on May 14th. We will likely be in our new home, the Bill Lane designed City Commission chambers, hopefully.
That's good luck.
Don't put that out there.
we're hopeful, but we will likely not be in the convention center.
So the April meeting is confirmed here?
No.
Even the April is
we
not.
We will not be here at the April meeting. I was going to give an announcement at the end of our meeting. Currently, we are scheduled to be at City Hall at the first floor conference room. That's where the voting is taking place now. That is how we've noticed our meeting. There's still potentially some variables with testing that space. We do have to wait till the voting is completely completed so we can get our staff in there and test the space. But as of now, we're hopeful we will be in the first floor conference room where the voting takes place at City Hall.
And to my fellow staff members, if you haven't had the opportunity to go over to Miami and check out the kiosks, I mean, they're all the way up in Don Biscayne Boulevard, and you can see how they are not obtrusive to the surroundings around there. And I actually have played around with them, and they're really quite amazing.
So I do have, and I would be willing to share with Debbie, that they can then send out to the board, a photo and a video that I took of the one that's half a block from my office. I walked by it the other day, and so I was, let me play with it. And I can take another one that's slightly better than the one that I took. But I'm happy to share that with the board so you guys have it. I thought it was interesting, and I will say, just for color commentary, although we've concluded this item, is that on the backside, I thought it was very interesting, on the backside of it, the photo that you'll see, is they were talking about like local ordinances, like, oh, FYI, you can or can't do this in Miami. So it was just a nice way of like presenting, like, what does it say? It said, hold on, I almost deleted it. Smoking and vaping is prohibited in public parks and beaches per Chapter 37 of the City Code in Miami. And it has like the little no signs. And then it just has a big picture of like the Miami skyline. So it was just a nice, and that's one side of this. Without interacting. So I thought it was a nice. Great.
And you'll send those through Debbie?
Okay. Great. I will.
Thank you. All right. Debbie, you want to take
okay.
it away?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have one scheduled discussion item and then the state legislation update. So at the last meeting, at the March meeting, I provided you with a list which is not all-encompassing. This list is what we've obtained from the city's building department and some of our personal knowledge of 37 buildings that are vacant and or abandoned. Again, this is not a comprehensive list. This list will change over time. And for example, just earlier today, we were made aware of the property on Espanola and is it Pennsylvania? Thank you, Jake. That the school board owns, Miami-Dade School Board owns that little house. I think it's a Dixon house, and that's been boarded up for quite some time. That wasn't necessarily on our list because, again, that's under the jurisdiction of Miami-Dade County School Board, not our city's building department. So I don't want to offend anyone or leave out anyone. Certainly, this list can be modified over time. But the list we gave you, we tried to, again, we were given a lot of these addresses by the building department for properties that they are currently monitoring. Some of these, as noted on the list, do have active Historic Preservation Board approvals and are currently in permitting processes. And so we made those notations, but we just wanted to give this to the board for informational purposes only. And if there is a specific property that you are concerned about or you would like more information or you would like us to reach out to the owners to answer any questions you may have, we are willing to do that.
Right,
The Traymore, and they do have active building permits, so that is under construction, but it is vacant, and I can add that to our list. So,
maybe Debbie, you can just give, because we have some, you can give some guidance as to what, as to how you think we should be thinking about this list, because there are lots of buildings, there's lots of buildings,
and we've been asked by several people, and this is really through the building department, to provide properties that have unsafe structures violations. Well, that's a massive list, because an unsafe structures violation does not typically signify that, oh, it's unsafe, it's going to be demolished, right? If you have an expired building permit, you could be issued an unsafe structures violation. If you have an elevator that hasn't been inspected, that could be issued an unsafe structures violation. We do monitor these, not only the building department, but also code compliance for minimum property maintenance and fencing standards. We do know that certain of these properties can become a significant nuisance to residents living in the neighborhood. Some of the addresses on this list have actually met with architects recently for renovation projects. Again, that's not a guarantee that these buildings will be renovated. And obviously, we have the demolition by neglect ordinance. The city currently has, and we're working with Stephen Rothstein from the city attorney's office and the building department and co-compliance on unsafe structures violations that we believe are rising to the level of the demolition by neglect. I think there's at least a half a dozen of those cases, if not more, in the special magistrate process. And we will, certainly keep you updated as to those. We do have our procedures in place regarding the after-the-fact procedures. So if there is an instance where a building does have to be demolished prior to coming before this board, the after-the-fact procedures do apply in terms of when an applicant needs to file the application and certain restrictions that this board can place on any new development for that property.
Do we have any update on the Ivor Rose property?
Yes. So I believe the attorney was here during the last discussion to provide the board an update. I do believe the building official is close to issuing an order for the two homes that are part of that property. I have met with the representative from the owner, which is a trust. They fully intend to submit, if the demolition should take place, they fully intend to submit an application to this board for the after-the-fact demolition within the mandatory, I think it's 15 days. So they would be doing that and being in compliance with our regulations, and then ultimately can't get too much into the specifics of that because we do believe that will be coming before you imminently. The board would have the presumption of limiting certain development on that area. The representative from the owner is also well aware of that. Emily is here from Burke Alfredel Fernandez and Tapanis. I don't know if you have anything to add, Emily.
Good morning. No, Emily Balter, Burke Alfredel Fernandez and Tapanis, Office of 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. We're representing Ivor Rose's estate at the moment. They are currently going through the special master process. They've retained a structural engineer going through and studying the actual percentage of decline in the building, as well as demolition contractors to determine the best way to shore up the building, cut electricity, etc., as well as there are issues related to the seawall for this site and the relationship of the structure to the seawall and making sure that the seawall reconstruction and the timing of that as well. We are close to a demolition order, we believe, but we wanted to make sure we had these expert reports submitted prior to that, and we will be ready within 15 days to submit after the fact permits.
So I was just asking Debbie if I could share. So for the benefit of you guys and up here on the board, after the last meeting, Mickey, the attorney, had offered anybody who wanted to go see the property prior to demolition, obviously, because I was curious, you know, really what's the status and the state of this property. So it's been vacant for quite some time. There are places where, it's honestly quite amazing to me that this building was constructed in the municipal city limits of anything, just the way that it strikes me very much as kind of cobbled together, as you might see outside of any sort of zoning code or building planning code. It's on the canal at the end of Michigan. I don't know the address off the top of my head. 16th, 17th, something.
1800 Michigan and 1818 Michigan.
There you go.
Across from
opposite
the Publix.
Yes. So there are places where, you know, you can see that the seawall is, almost kind of collapsing into the canal, where the water comes up under and into the foundation. My understanding from the engineer who happened to be there while I was there was that there's sand packed in there, but then it wasn't like properly maintained or it's just old construction. And so all the footings and everything, the sand has been washed out from underneath there, which is allowing the water to come up underneath the structure. It's been vacant for some time. It was all boarded up. The neighbors have been complaining because it's become a hazard. While I was there, we went into one of the the far north property, which was kind of apartments at one point, it seemed like. Someone had broken in there and had been camping out in there. In fact, goes back to our recent discussions, they had made a pallet on the floor and there was an ashtray sitting next to it. And I said, they're smoking in bed inside a vacant structure. So I say all that just so we kind of have an understanding. I know that they're going through all the procedures there and they're going to have to come to us sort of after the fact, but that was the state of what I saw. And evidently every time they open one of the doors, people try to rush in to kind of squat in there. So that's what that looks like.
Okay, and thank you, Emily. Thank you for sticking around. Finally, I wanted to give the board an update on the Resiliency and Unsafe Structures Act. So I think it was last week it received its final approval. So both the House and Senate have approved the bill. It is not law at this point. It is waiting for the governor's signature or veto. We do not expect a veto. So we have lobbyists that are still following this. And we put a huge effort. I want to thank Daniel Seraldo. I see he's on Zoom. And I want to thank our entire lobbyist team, Commissioner Alex Fernandez, several of the other commissioners as well. We're keeping an eye on this. So I just want to explain, if signed into law, which we do anticipate will happen, the map I gave you is, I think, the clearest way to illustrate the impact on our historic districts. So if you look at the map, this legislation will be affecting all of the areas that you see in red. So these are areas that are limited to portions of properties that are seaward of the CCCL. So while it affects multiple historic districts, it only affects those properties that have a portion of land eastward of the CCCL. So we do have a portion between 1st Street and 6th Street on the east side of Ocean Drive. And I think there's three parcels, two contributing buildings on the west side of Ocean Drive. at 6th Street. Then, so that would be in the Ocean Beach Historic District. The Collins Waterfront Historic District, starting at 22nd, north of 22nd Street, all the way to north of 43rd Street. So those areas would be included as part of this legislation. The entire Morris Lapidus Mid-Century Historic District, which goes from about 44th Street to 53rd Street. We have one historic site, which is the Bath Club. That's an individually designated historic site. Then we have the North Beach Resort Historic District. And finally, Harding Town Site Historic District, and this area would be limited to the parcels on Ocean Terrace and potentially Collins Avenue if the approved project, which aggregates the lots between Ocean and Collins, were to be constructed. That aggregation would then result in the properties also being having a portion that is seaward of the CCCL. That is unique because there's no alley for that portion, so those properties could potentially be aggregated. And not only would it affect the west side of Ocean Terrace, but it could also impact the east side of Collins Avenue in that section. So what this legislation will do is it will preempt the City of Miami Beach from enforcing its historic preservation procedures for demolition. So any property within these areas that is non-compliant with the current FEMA regulations for finished floor elevation would be permitted as of right to obtain a demolition permit subject to review by the Florida Building Code, but not subject to either the Planning Department staff review or this board's review. Any new construction, replacement construction, would still be under the jurisdiction of this board, and this board would review any replacement construction. This board would not have the ability to reduce the square footage of any new development, to reduce the height, or to require reconstruction or replication.
Ray, we need you on mic.
Based on that, right now, the Tramore, a.k.a. Como, could be torn down.
If this is signed into law, yes. I believe. Now, we haven't confirmed each of these buildings in terms of their relationship with the current FEMA regulations, but I think it's safe to say that the vast majority, if not all, of our older buildings built before the 1970s when the FEMA rules came in would not comply entirely.
I've been watching that building because there's no work going on. There may be a permit, but nobody's working. So I've been wondering what's going to happen, and I'm sure that's what they're waiting for. Thank you.
And we spent a lot of time on Ocean Terrace. Do you know where that is in the permitting in the process?
So the Ocean Terrace Park, which is a private public partnership, is underway. They have the permit. They are doing work for the park. So that's great news. For the private development, I have not seen personally, and I don't believe that they have submitted for a permit for that project. They do have multiple extensions for the HPB orders because this goes back, 3 or 4 years from the original approval. They have received State of Florida emergency extensions, which can extend the life of their HPB approval, you know, for 6-7 years or more. So they do still have an active approval, but I have not personally seen any activity in terms of permitting that project.
Well, thank you. Those are very important updates, and we'll stay tuned for how they continue on and impact us and our city. So thank you very much. And with that, is that the end of
yes,
your report?
That concludes the meeting, unless Nick has anything.
Motion to adjourn? No.
Motion to adjourn.
There we go.
And we will keep you posted on the location for the April meeting, but plan on parking at City Hall and staying at City Hall. Take care.